And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week I made it clear that who the decider is in Washington. It's the President. I am the decision-makinger. I make the decisions, and I decidify on all those decisions. Then I take up my mind and conclude to a finalized conclusible. The executive decider-in-chief must chief until the end executing authoritates. I want to be real clear on that. My staff followizes my orderings. It's vital. As we face anemones abroad, overseasoned, that the presider and the chiefs preview all my optimums, listening to all my voices and wordings, and then confounding to a replete depletion, and then actify on those conflations. Thank you for Kleenexing, and God bless you.
Studio deep within the broadcasting multiplex of PBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Oh, I don't. I still have the long cachet, but it's got the coin sound in the front of it, I think. Let's see if I can. Do I have that here? Wait, see, I've only got the. Oh, thank you, Scotty. Oh, well, I'll have to use that. God bless you, Scotty, and thank you. And here I was going to call you a shiftless nitwit. I'm sorry, I take it back. Would you like to come in and say the word naked 500 or 600 more times before we begin the program?
Just checking.
Okay. Just giving you the chance, my friend. All right. Why, hello there. It's 3 minutes and 18 seconds after the... Later. Okay, thank you. After the hour of 11 in this the month of April in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970. Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program. It is Thursday, and welcome to day 12. You'd like to be part of our program today, and why wouldn't you? Why would you not? As we broadcast live from the Super Digital Studios, deep within... See, that's exactly how it's going to sound when I get it fully produced. Excellent. Well done, Scotty. All right, well, we're here in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, for whom we are writing a fantastic anthem. We'll talk about that later on. The press release did go out yesterday. Yesterday around 1:30, 2 o'clock, something like that. The press release from Susan Reynolds, CBS Radio Portland marketing guru, was released. That was unleashed upon the Portland press. Who will ignore it, as they usually do? Let me just say this. And this will all make sense here in a second. I'm just going to say that this program has been... How long has the Portland Mercury been in Portland? It's only been like 4 years, right? Was it the Rocket before that, or the Stranger?
Well, it's the Stranger in Seattle. This is like Portland's edition of the Stranger.
Stranger?
I barely knew her.
I really wasn't a setup for that. I really was curious. So did we have... We didn't have the Stranger here.
No.
All right.
So the Mercury is relatively new, I guess.
So it's a sister publication to the Stranger.
It is.
From the people who brought you.
Yes.
All right, okay. So this is... So the Portland Mercury is to the Stranger as Maxim is to that FHM magazine. Or whatever. Well, in any event. So the Portland Mercury has been public... They've been public... Now I'm going to say everything with Justin B. Bush. They've been publicating a new printicizing here in... Portland defined. See, I can't do it. I don't even have... I'm not even smart enough to talk dumb. To do that sort of linguistic Victor Borga thing that they do with Bush. Anywho, so the Portland Mercury's been here 4 or 5 years, and I have tried relentlessly, because we're such media whores. Which is really... You can tell we're media whores because of the bright red lipstick, by the way.
Oh, I hate
Bam!
You.
Oh, you knew this was coming. And it's you got a whole week of this coming,
sister. I know.
You got 7 days.
I put it so far behind me, I didn't think the day would ever come.
So we've been trying to get into the Portland Mercury for like 3, 4, 5 years. And I shouldn't criticize the Portland the media with such a broad brush. The Willamette has actually been really good to us over the years. They've covered it. I mean, it's not like I expect them to publish every little tidbit that I send their way. Every day, Rick Emerson, you know, lives and takes breath, eats brand mix for breakfast. They didn't have to publish everything. But the Willamette has done some great pieces on us over the years. The Oregonian, of course, Christy Turnquist and Peter Carlin especially. They've helped us out. They've publicized some stuff. They've covered some developments in the life of the program. And, the television has been, television has paid a fair amount of attention to us. Every so often, even actually mentioning the name of the station. But the Portland Mercury, and I was just talking to somebody else about this, who shall remain nameless. There's another radio program in the building that is desperately trying to work. They're trying to do something with the Portland Mercury. They're trying to get something done with the Portland Mercury where they do a sort of give and take. Where somebody from this station, writes something or does something or contributes some sort of article to the Portland Mercury in exchange for which a Portland Mercury person comes on the program and expounds upon whatever. And it's like they can't even get their phone calls returned. You get the feeling sometimes that if you're not, I mean, really, if you're not one of them, if you don't have permanent sparkles on your teeth and if you're not wearing corduroy pants, when you send your emails to the Mercury, they just go into some sort of virtual shredder. Like, it's sense that your hipness quotient is not, like, it's like you must be at least this hip to ride this ride.
Maybe it's automated. Maybe it's run out of Seattle and there's really nobody here.
That's actually an interesting question. I wonder to what extent.
It might be like the clear channel of newspapers.
That's Tim Riley who created that joke, by the way. Anybody else uses that, you got to give him 15 cents. I know that William Stephen Humphrey is here. He's the guy that writes the I Love TV column. I met him. I sat next to someone purporting to be him anyway. I sat next to someone who claimed that he was William Stephen Humphrey from the Portland. To his credit, to be fair, he was a very nice guy. He and Daria O'Neill and I sat next to each other at the Mount Tabor, the Soapbox Derby or whatever a couple years ago. Well, anyway, I'm just saying, I get the feeling that and I'm not going to lump anybody else into my sad, sorry bandwagon here, but I get the feeling that I am not quite hip enough for the Mercury.
No, I'm not either.
Well,
this is just by default.
I'm just saying.
I haven't been hip in about 30 years.
your hip by date expired in 1977.
It did.
But if you pick up the brand new Portland Mercury, and the brand new Portland Mercury is the one that is the election issue. And it's got a small gnome-like creature on the front.
And it has a really great article about Chuck Palahniuk.
It's got Chuck Palahniuk. It's got the...
He's doing a reading next week, by the way.
Where? At Powell's? Well, he's going to be on court in Fat Boy.
Where was it? It was at a bar.
Hey, did you ever email them about getting him on the show?
No.
Okay. Well, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care. I'm just saying, if you pass up the opportunity to have Chuck Palahniuk sit in the studio, you'll never forgive yourself. And every guy you know with a pierced anything will hate you forever.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Right.
Okay.
Who's this Chuck Palahniuk guy? Chuck Palahniuk. That's his garbage pail kid. He wrote Fight Club and other works.
Oh.
He wrote Lullaby, actually, which is a great book.
I wrote Survivor, which is my favorite.
And he wrote Choke, which is just weird. He's a Portland. He's one of those Portland icon guys. We'll probably name check him in the Portland Anthem. I'm getting way off point. My point here on the Rick Emerson Show, which is part of the illustrious lineup of AM 970 Solid State Radio, is if you pick up the brand new edition of the Portland Mercury, on the back, you will see one Sarah X. Dillon. She's, we were talking about this last week, how Bishop's Barbershop. And I say this now simply as an observation. This is something I'm observing. Bishop's Barbershop has this whole thing for finding nubile young lads and ladettes and photographing them in various states of undress and then putting it on the back of the Portland Mercury.
Yeah, that was my friend Pasha's idea.
You don't have to explain. You don't have to justify.
I'm not naked.
I don't even really know that you're naked in this photograph. Or topless, as the case may be. Are you blushing? You're actually blushing. I think this is the first. I don't think I've ever seen you blush before. You are flushing. I wish I had pictures
fine.
Of this. I'm not trying to embarrass you. I'm simply making an observation.
You know that I don't show a lot of skin, and now, like, I hadn't thought about it, and now, like, I'm looking at it, and it's everywhere.
Well, you can tell you're naked, but you are covered by the dog. Yeah. Suck on that. Pick up today's Portland Mercury, brand new Portland Mercury, the election issue. You look on the back, and it actually says, to their credit, they actually name-check the program, and then they use the station name correctly. This is Sarah X. Dillon, producer of the Rick Emerson Show, AM 970.
Woo!
Bitches. What I'm talking about.
Yeah,
so there you go.
I was at this bar last night, and my friend came running in, and...
You're naked!
I know.
How many times has Scotty asked if you're naked?
Six.
Fantastic. Excellent. So
weird, too.
It is. It's, and I finally figured out who you look like here.
Who?
I finally figured out. You look like, and please don't, now,
oh,
I want you to
God,
take us the wrong way. And we'll do introductions all around, and we'll talk about what's coming up in today's program here in a second. But I'm going to say this 500 or 600 times today, that Sarah Dillon is on the back of the Portland Mercury, because it's a great photograph. It really is. Very cool. Congratulations. It looks fantastic. And we're all just big, attention-sucking spotlight whores
really
here. I mean, let's just...
Slutty.
Well, but I mean, that is...
I don't think it looks slutty.
It's not slutty.
Let's flip it around. Let's see.
It's not slutty so much as it is trashy. No? It's not trashy so much as it is sort of hoary.
I don't think it's hoary. I think it's more trashy than hoary.
We should do an Insta poll right now. I would like you now to please be picking up today's copy of the Portland Mercury, the election issue. And then we will do an Insta poll here in a while about whether Sarah Dillon looks A, trashy, B, slut-like, C, whore-like, or D,
beautiful.
Just plain beautiful. 503-733-2970. Here it is. You asked me to show it to you like you haven't...
Look at how cute Muppet is,
like
though.
You didn't spend the last 9 hours staring at this.
No, I don't have it. I didn't bring one home with me. I just saw it last night.
All right.
When I was out and about.
I want you to know that it took me about 3 hours to find a copy of this last night, which I did. I finally found one outside Angelo's. Because everywhere I went, it was either empty or it was last week's issue. Here's who you look like. And I don't want you to take this the wrong way.
God. I love it when you start sentences like that.
I don't want you to... This isn't the insult it sounds like. No, it's that you look like, on the back of the Mercury, where you were very clearly topless, holding only a small dog in front of you. You look a lot like, and Tim will know exactly who I'm referring to here. You look kind of like, in this photograph, on the back of the Portland Mercury, you look a lot like Yvonne DiCarlo. And Yvonne DiCarlo, who recently passed away, was the woman who played Lily Munster. Now, I should be clear, you don't look like Lily Munster as such, but you do look kind of like Yvonne DiCarlo, who is a very beautiful woman. And a woman whose beauty really doesn't get appreciated these days because people just remember her in all the weird vampire makeup. But you do kind of have that look. Now, the makeup, I think, it contributes a little bit. Because you, I mean, look, can I, and wait, you know, and we're
actually,
friends.
I did my own makeup for that.
Really? Because we can speak openly here as adults and as friends. As pale as you normally are, you look like 100 times more pale in this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that's photoshopping or whether that's body makeup or whether it was just a milky day for you.
I'm pretty pale, and then B, I think there's a lot of blue light.
You're hella pale in this. You're like, you're translucent in this. You really look like you ought to be a member of Bauhaus. Which is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. But you look very, very pale in this photograph. But of course, then you've got this, I mean, it's like this lipstick that probably has a name like Broadway Rose or something. It's like
that was $27 lipstick that
really?
My dog ate.
$27,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've seen street walkers who wear less prominent lipstick. Really, I have to say that. So, and then you got
thanks,
this giant. No, I mean, oh come on. You know that you look alluringly intense in this photograph.
Kill us at the moment on Cold Case Files.
Marge Helgenberger. Hey, am I making up that name? Is that even close to being correct?
I'm not sure.
It's
the lady who looks like Sarah Dillon.
The best thing is I just hit her name and you nodded and said yes.
Whatever.
We have no idea. Please note that we're sending me a photograph of the woman on Cold Case Files who apparently looks like Sarah Dillon, who is naked.
I am not naked. I'm wearing a halter thingy.
Well, okay, you are topless. You don't have to tell me, but it looks from the... Look, I'm just saying, from the appearance of this, and I'm simply speaking journalistically, I'm not trying to speak in a prurient or lecherous or leering fashion. I'm simply saying, from my objective assessment of this photograph, it does not appear that from the waist up you are wearing any clothing. It does appear that you are covered, I swear to God, by a small... You don't have to explain to me. Many, many things have been explained away as being art. Caligula, or that bullwhip thing from Mapplethorpe. I'm just saying, it does look as though you are topless in this photograph, shielded by only a small dog.
That's my Muppet.
And even... Have you seen Sarah Dillon's Muppet?
Okay, look at
the... Pick up today's Portland Mercury, won't you please?
No, my dog is very cute, and he has a little pink mohawk.
Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. We'll talk more about it. 503. Hey. It's a great photograph.
Now I'm all self-conscious.
Did they ask you to go topless, or was that a thing that you volunteered to do?
No, I wasn't topless.
You are topless.
Trap me. And Pasha, no, it was Pasha's idea. She, this girl, my friend, she does this thing on Pasha Productions, and she had this idea to go for just the hair, like the hair's supposed to speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone appears to be nude.
Do you suppose anybody's going to be noticing the hair? How many days do you think it will take the average listener of this show to notice the fact that you're even holding a dog? I mean, because really, let's be honest, you and I have a warm sibling-like relationship, but really, it took me about 30 seconds to go, oh, and there's a dog. Because it was just sort of, it's just a little overwhelming. That's
but
all
I don't
I'm
understand
saying.
What's so slutty about it. I mean, it's just hair and a face.
Really, would you like a point-by-point analysis? I mean, I can really do that if you want, but I don't think you want that. And please understand that that's not an insult in any way. I don't say any of these things to be crude or in a pejorative fashion. We're big fans of this look on the Rick Emerson Show. And clearly you're a fan of this look as well, since it's, you know, you. And you did your own makeup. And decided to be topless. You are topless. Holding a dog in front of you does not count as having clothing on.
No, I have a strapless dress on.
I don't believe you. I'm saying right now that I don't believe you, and I believe that that is a fib. I believe you are lying to us. I believe you are bearing false witness in violation of one of our Lord Jesus' commandments.
The woman on Cold Case Files is Catherine Morris, who plays Lily Rush, the lone female detective in the Philadelphia Homicide Squad.
You totally look like you should be solving hot crimes somewhere in a city while wearing
like an extra in silk stockings.
Well, I was just going to say that. Wearing spike heels, silk stocking style. Trying to say that 100 times. Boy, this is the worst show open ever. Hi, it's the Rick Emerson Radio. It's 11:15 in the goddamn morning already. Good God Almighty. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I'd like to say hello to all CBS management who have enjoyed this train wreck of a show opening today. Rick at RickEmerson.com. For your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your what have you. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We'll discuss that at length later on in today's program. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and occasionally topless Sarah X. Dillon, who joins us now on the show.
Okay.
All right. I'll just give you a second to chew your food. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, the Senate follows the House's lead in approving an Iraqi spending package, but the stipulation is we have to withdraw. The president threatens to veto that. John McCain not only appears on Larry King, but he yucks it up on The Daily Show. And Sally Fields Gardner is bitten by a rattlesnake.
Sally Fields Gardner, who's that?
Sally Fields?
Oh, I thought that was like a hyphenated thing. Oh, Sally Fields Gardner.
Oh.
My pop culture meter is falling. All right. So there you go. I haven't seen it, but I heard John McCain got a what they are calling a chilly reception on last night's Daily Show.
Well, we'll find out what happened.
I heard he was not welcomed warmly. All right, so here's what's coming up later on today. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard will be joining us to talk about this Iraq spending bill. Jim Roop, who has a special surprise to share with us. Jim Roop, who I believe, well, I'll just go ahead and say this. I think he's going to be on Nancy Grace tonight, isn't he? Well, not actually on Nancy Grace.
That's what Richard said. He said Jim's going to be on around 5:40 tonight.
Nancy Grace, hot or not?
Isn't that crazy looking blonde lady?
Yeah.
Mm.
You know,
Nancy Grace.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
CNN headline news.
Blonde, kind of a Wicked Witch of the West hotness kind of going on there.
Yeah. That's for when you were on your way from CNN to MSNBC. You kind of skipped those next two channels.
That's sort of like the, that channel is sort of like the, it's like those middle letters that you didn't bother to learn when you were a kid. LMNOP, you just go all the way through. You're skipping down to the really cool letters like X and Z. All right, so we got to Jim Roop. I think it's going to be a Nancy Grace tonight talking about Phil Spector. And let me just say this observation about Phil Spector. And I'm calling this out right now. Phil Spector, I think Tim Riley summed it up flawlessly this morning before the show. We were talking about Phil Spector, and I said, Phil Spector, and I just sort of let it trail off for a second because I wasn't quite sure how to phrase it. And Tim just said, he looks like a lady. And really, that is the most accurate summation. Phil Spector right now not only looks like a drag queen, but he looks like a really peculiar kind of drag queen. It is a drag queen who is in turn dressed as a 1960s housewife. Or Mrs. Landingham from The West Wing, if you're an Aaron Sorkin fan. If you are an Aaron Sorkin fan or a fan of The West Wing, I want you to picture Mrs. Dolores Landingham, who was the personal assistant to President Bartlett on The West Wing. Look up Mrs. Landingham in like a Google image search, and then look at Phil Spector in court today. Bam! Separated at birth. It's creepy. So we'll talk to Jim Roop. Also, Steve Kastenbaum is good. Apparently, he was there When Rosie O'Donnell made her statement about the, you know, I'm leaving and I'm whatever and I'm leaving The View. So he interviewed some people who were on the way out of that View taping. And we'll find out what they had to say. What else? We will continue our hunt for what we are now calling the second worst story in the history of the world, because yesterday we discovered a story so bad, so terrible, so awful, so cringe-inducingly horrifying that it can never be topped or surpassed in any way. So we will continue our search for the second worst story in the history of the world. And we've got two real strong competitors. We'll get to that today.
Oh, we have something really quick for motorists out there. We have an accident on I-5 southbound just south of the Fremont Bridge. All lanes are closed. Traffic being diverted to use I-405 southbound.
So why not just sit and relax and listen to the live soothing sounds of the Rick Emerson Show?
It's a smile in the center of your dial.
It's the station that everybody at work can agree on. Did you really just say that? That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
It's a smile in the center of your dial.
Sounds almost naughty.
That's what I'm talking about. The smile in the center of your dial sounds naughty. It kind of does, doesn't it? All right.
I bet Bud Collier would say that.
Yes. Yes, I suppose. All right. Oh, God, it's 20 after. What else? Top five, which we may or may not get to today. And by the way, I'd like to just do a few quick show notes, and we got some people calling. We'll get some of these calls. A few quick show notes. One, the photo gallery for Listener Party 10 is now up. You go to 970.am. It's right there, 970.am. The photo gallery's up. The intro video is up. The video that we created for Lisa Goddard is up. And I actually had to email CNN and ask them not to tip her off to that because we're actually sending her. So I won't mention it to her today because we actually took it. At the party, we filmed this greeting for Lisa Goddard from CNN. She wasn't able to be there. So we filmed the whole greeting, and we burned it onto a DVD, which looks great. I saw it last night. And we're sending it off to her. So I'm going to try not to tip her off to the website because I don't want her to see it beforehand. I want her to receive it in the mail and for her to be surprised. But you go to 970.am, and there's a whole gallery up of pictures and videos from Listener Party 10. So go check those out. And I don't think we have time to do this now, but I got a whole bunch of... It was a good day for bad guests. I got all of these press releases from people who want to book their various D and E list celebrities on the program for one thing or another. So we'll talk a little bit more, including, by the way, Alison Arngrim, who you know as Nellie Olson from Little House on the Prairie. I swear to God, Nellie Olson is coming to that place. What is that place? CeCe's Slaughters. What a terrible name. What a terrible name for an establishment. I don't even know what that place is. Is that by Darcell's?
Yeah, it's the
by Old Town Pizza. CeCe, is that what it is?
Oh, yeah.
See, I've never...
Well, it sounds like it could be violent.
That's what I'm saying. I have no problem with it being either gay or big. I'm simply saying I wouldn't know because I've never gone in there because it sounds like an unnerving place. It just seems a little... Just putting slaughter in the name of your establishment doesn't necessarily make me more inclined to go there.
They play the raunchiest gay porn I have ever seen. You walk in there and it's nasty.
Well, I'll go tonight then.
All right.
Fantastic. I'm penciling it into my dance card. Well done. CeCe Slaughters. It's like JT disembowel you.
And it's everywhere. Everywhere. There are TVs everywhere.
There's raunchy gay porn everywhere.
Any eye level, everywhere you look.
Fantastic. Well, it does make sense then that she's going to be there. Nellie Olson does, which they have spelled Olison. Nellie Olson does seem to have sort of a peculiar appeal in that community. But I mean, she did, and she herself looks really butch. Although I'm pretty sure she's married, and I always ask this question, and I can never get a straight answer. But I'm pretty sure that Alison Arngrim, who played Nellie Olson, did some kind of porn a few years ago. I'm pretty sure she did some sort of adult film, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, 12 years ago. And I may be wrong, and I'm not trying to slander her in any way. I believe, and I have no problem with that. I'm all for Nellie Olson getting nude as an adult, not as a 12-year-old. But I'm pretty sure that she did that at some point. Anyway, so Nellie Olson from Little House on the Prairie fame is going to be performing at CeCe Slaughter's Confessions of a Prairie Bitch.
Are you kidding me?
Right there. Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. A night of comedy with Alison Arngrim, Nellie Olson of Little House on the Prairie fame. So there you go. Benefits of Cascade AIDS Project, $20 at the door. I can't go because it's the same night as Carlin. George Carlin.
Oh, and I can't go because that's against me.
Yeah, which is too bad. In this blurry...
Oh, I thought that was an evening with Peter Carlin.
An evening with Peter... Where he just sits there and, like, looks at his watch.
Five.
Yeah. Or are you just coming and you go, hi, Peter, coming? Yeah, what's up? Well, I don't know. We paid to see you. Okay, well, look, I'm real busy and I got on deadline. So, can we make this fast? Okay, but I just... Okay, and then you leave. And then he writes something snarky about you the next day. That's an evening with Peter Carlin. So, yeah, so I realize it's now almost 11:30. We've gotten nothing done because I keep now talking about Nellie Olson from Little House on the Prairie. In this smudgy, blurred, Xerox-like press release, though, she looks kind of hot. I guess maybe you tell by the fact
you think
that
everybody's hot.
It's so blurred you can't see any of her features. What?
You think everybody's hot.
This is such
you
a...
You can see, that's a good thing about you, Rick Emerson. You can see the hotness in everybody.
It's just that I have no standards. She has... her. This is so blurred, it doesn't look like she has a nose. She just has what Tim Ryan would call breathing holes in the front of her face. It's also a little creepy. I'm looking again at this press release from Nellie Olson, Little House on the Prairie, who's doing a comedy show here. And I suspect it's pretty good. Here's the thing. My gut sense on this is that it's pretty great. I don't know why. There's just something. There's something about a night of comedy with Nellie Olson. And the fact that it's a big gay nightclub filled with raunchy porn, something about that screams fantastic. Also fabulous, but mainly fantastic. And I'm just going to say this one final note. She does look pretty hot in this photograph, but what's really unnerving about it is there's this big hot photo of Nellie Olson as an adult. And then it is bracketed by four photos of her as like a 10-year-old.
Oh, with the pigtails?
Yeah, so that's a little creepy. That's like when, you know, you have a girlfriend and you go over and they show you a photograph of her when she's like 11. You know what I mean? You go to the parents' house or whatever, and here she is as a cheerleader when she was 9.
Oh, and that's what Johnny Whitaker did. That Family Affair kid when he was in that play in Oregon City.
Really?
They showed him a picture as he looks now, like, I guess he's 50, and showed pictures of him on the side in case people didn't know.
Oh, really? Oh, that's...
As a child on Family Affair.
That never even occurred to me that that's why these photos of her as a child are here. It's in case you don't remember who she is. You know what that? You know what else? You know what that's like? And I know we're behind, but, you know, she's going to be zen with it. You know what that's like? It's like, I was thinking about this yesterday. I was having lunch, and I was reading the Willamette yesterday, and I was just going through. And they were doing that thing about, they were doing the musical listings, and they were doing that thing with some of the acts where they have to put why you should care to see this person performing solo. Like, for example, God bless her, because I love her. She's a beautiful woman, beautiful voice. But they, you know, a night with Jeanette Napolitano. And then it says, Voice of Concrete Blonde. And it's just kind of sad when they have to do that. Or Tim Finn is coming. And it's like, Tim Finn from Split Ends and Crowded House. And I always feel kind of bad for artists who have to sort of have, like, a little thing behind their name explaining why you should care to see them. Especially when it's something from, like, 35 years ago. Especially Nellie Olson. Doing her hit show, Prairie Bitch. I kind of want to see this. It's a shame that I can't. And it's exactly the same time as George Carlin, too. I'm missing out on gay porn, too. Damn. Well, she'll be back. Really? There's like 100 calls here. I haven't even talked about this guy that wants to be our intern. I say. Making Scotty J just the tiniest bit more nervous about his job security.
Where are we going to put an intern?
I don't know. But I'm sure we can find something degrading for him to do. Don't you think it'd be a nice perk for Scotty to have somebody to order around?
He'd love it.
All right. Well, really? Okay. Let me get this Nellie Olson comment. Tracy, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello there.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know that I'd be really surprised if the lady that played Nellie Olson did porn. Because apparently the actor that she was played her husband on the show died of AIDS.
Oh. Well, thanks for injecting a creepy element of depression and awkwardness into this call.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Isn't that what this is about?
Well, there you go. Thanks so much for being in. Thanks for being Johnny Buzzkill. Appreciate that.
Well, she's on a national tour.
Hi, I'm Tracy Killjoy.
I just went to her website, which is hgd.com.
HGD?
Yeah.
What does that even stand for?
I don't know.
All right. Thank you.
She's done a lot of AIDS awareness stuff, so.
All right. Well, maybe it's okay. Well, let's never discuss that again. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Tracy.
Bye.
Thanks. Thanks for bringing the room down. I appreciate that. Oh, she's going to be in Seattle on the 2nd. Then she's coming to Portland.
A fun storm in the castle.
So it's Friday, May 4th. So it's a week from whatever, a week from tomorrow.
So then Saturday, she goes back to Seattle. And then on to Orange County.
Did you want to know something shocking? All of the rest of these calls, I'm looking down. We have almost a full bank of calls here. There was the one who just wanted to depress us all about Nellie Olson. Thanks. The other calls are all about that worst story ever from yesterday. All of them.
Well, they say she grew up in Hollywood and has many wonderful stories to share from living at the Chateau Marmont during the swinging 60s.
Is that all?
Cool.
Well, I mean, Little House on the Prairie was in the 70s, right? That was like, well, like 75, 76, something like that. So, and she was about 12. So I would say that she was probably born in like maybe 63, 64.
Mm-hmm.
Is she from a Hollywood family? Is that why? I can't believe we're spending this much. We are probably the only radio station in the country spending this much time talking about this Nellie Olson comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
We'll see ya.
Let's do one more and then we'll break. I'm taking a call randomly here. Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick. A little nervous on there, so bear with me a little bit.
Oh, don't suck. You're going to suck.
I have a thing for one of the worst memories that you have, or whatever the topic was yesterday.
We have this ongoing competition to find the worst story in the history of the world.
Right. Mine is when my son was born.
Now, is this going to involve destruction of the female swimsuit area in any way?
Well, I was going to say it kind of pertains to yesterday's, but not quite as bad.
Please to be very.
I will clean it up.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so vision is like just like yesterday to me. I was up in the general area and just wanted to stay up there, and I thought, you know, I'd like to see my son born. And at this particular time,
you're in the neighborhood.
Yeah, so I decided to kind of go south, so to say.
Uh-huh.
And they used a scissors like as you would cut gauze to open the front door or the front mailbox. Okay, now that part kind of got me. So I went back up to the head part, and he was born, and they put him in the little incubator thing as they normally do.
Yes.
And I was looking beautiful, you know. I turn around, and everything that's inside is hanging out of my wife, and that vision right there has stuck
with me. When you say everything inside, you mean like guts?
Yes.
wasn't touching the floor, was it?
No, but here's...
Tim Riley just took off his headphones. Well done, sir.
Well, it's almost time for me to warm up my bowl of chili.
They had what looked like a garbage can that is there to catch everything.
That's the gut catcher.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
It was a horrible, horrible vision. And to this day, I mean, just like yesterday.
I can't eat brisket to this day. Javier, will you bring in the gut catcher, please? Thank you.
Yeah, it was horrible. But, I mean, a beautiful day. I mean, it was great and everything. But just that vision.
Sure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, you, Rick. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. You did great. All right. Who wants linguine? We're going to take a break. If you're on hold, hang tight. We'll get back. More calls around the corner. And Lisa Goddard, you stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show from AM 970 Solid State Radio. Rick, this email says about that Mercury photo. Get used to that subject line, by the way. It's a fine picture. This guy says, Rick, that picture is no trashier than Sarah dressed as a homeless drunken Santa that my roommate took. Ho, ho, ho. And then at the bottom,
well,
it just says,
I'm just feeling
again,
really good about myself today.
He just signs it again at the bottom. Ho.
Thanks.
Why, hello there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. You shouldn't feel good. They didn't ask my ass to be in the back of the Mercury. You're just fishing for compliments now.
Yeah. No, actually, I'm not. No, because everything that you've told me is that I look like a slut, and then someone said that no better than me looking like a drunken Santa.
He didn't say no better. He said no worse. There's a difference.
What's the difference?
It's a subtle distinction. You look fine. It wasn't like they approached Scotty J to, you know, be thrusting his bosoms at the camera. Let's all picture that for a moment.
There's no bosom thrusting.
All right. Now, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson. I'm glad she got to hear this entire conversation and be made to feel awkward. Lisa Lisa Goddard from the Hill. Why, hello, Lisa. Let's pretend that whole exchange didn't happen, or at least that you didn't hear it.
All right, I can do that.
Fantastic. All right. Hey, by the way, and I know you are a West Wing fan.
Yes.
We're talking to Jim Rube later on about this Phil Spector thing. So I'm just going to say this. The next time you get a chance, I would like to encourage you to find a picture of what Phil Spector looks like at court this week, because, you know, he's on trial for murder for some woman he apparently or allegedly killed 4 years ago. Anyway, so he's on trial. He had that weird Ludwig von hair going on for a while.
Nice.
But now he looks, and here's the thing. Phil Spector has gone from looking like Louis the 14th to looking like a drag queen, but a very peculiar kind of drag queen. He does, in fact, look like a man trying to dress as Mrs. Dolores Landingham, president's assistant to the president on the West Wing. I want you, when we're done with this conversation, you look up a picture of Phil Spector, the way he looks at court, and he looks exactly like a drag queen, but sort of a 1960s housewife drag queen, who in turn looks exactly like Mrs. Landingham from the West Wing.
No way. Really?
I swear to God. You go,
how tall is he? Because she was a small woman.
Well, the photo I saw of him was he was just sort of sitting and looking very sullen in the courtroom as he hears a long litany of complaints about how he used to point guns at people. But so I'm not really sure how tall he is. I'm just saying he's got this weird gold, like, pudding basin page boy haircut and a lot of rouge.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and as Tim Riley, our intrepid newsman here, said, he looks like a lady, and that really is, it really is true. He looks very unnerving. I'm just saying that.
I had no idea.
It's true. All right, so if it sounds like there's some sort of, like this is all very tedious and tiring, it really isn't. It's just that it seems like this incremental move forward on this Iraq spending bill. So it did, it passed the House as expected.
That's correct. Yeah, it did. It passed the House last night, late, about 9 o'clock, and then just in the last hour and a half, it passed the Senate.
And it passed the Senate on its long, arduous trip to eventually being vetoed by the president.
Oh, that's right. I mean, he's got to have his big rubber stamp, and you've got to imagine someone at the White House, perhaps the president, wants a really supersized one for this bill.
Now, here's I'm sorry to interrupt, here's the dumb question. So when this is inevitably vetoed, is this sort of like a Sisyphus rolling the rock? Once this is done, are we just going to start this whole story cycle again with a different version of this bill being pushed through? Are we going to have to tread this particular path 800 or 900 times?
Yeah, basically.
Fantastic.
But the only nuance is going to be, rhetoric's still going to be out there. You'll still have the attack dog comments. All that stuff could still be popping up. But I think that Democrats are starting to concede that this next bill will likely not have any firm timetables for withdrawal in it. It sounds like the president's going to get what he wants, but we'll see.
On a little bit of a side note here, because there's so much talk about every presidential candidate from both sides of the aisle. And by the way, let me just do a little subtext inside. No, not a subtext. What am I trying to say, Sarah? A thing. Let me talk about a thing inside a thing here for a second.
Sure.
I did hear Hillary Clinton the other day speaking, and she did use the phrase, when I walk into the Oval Office January 20th, 2009, which is strange because I think that's actually the very first time I have ever actually heard her say explicitly or implicitly, I want to be elected president.
No. She said, when I'm president, blah, blah. She said that the war, you know, we'll get out of Iraq.
Really?
I'm president. She said that before.
All right. So she's
maybe I'm not clear on what you're saying.
It's just, I'm so used to them soft-soaping it, and I guess maybe I blinked and I missed. Because we've had this discussion several times about how there are all of these stages for declaring that you want to be president.
Right.
And it's like you sort of do a pre-announcement, and then an announcement, and then a post-announcement, and then the addendum to the post-announcement. That is all by way of saying this, that all of the candidates out there are having to talk about the war and the so forth and their timetable and their strategy. And John McCain was talking about it. He was on The Daily Show last night, for starters. And he's, you know, been out there. And is there a general sense in the zeitgeist that it's... Have people just sort of shrugged him off? And they've just sort of written him off as he...
A little bit, they're starting to.
And from whence does that derive? Is it the idea that he's too old? Is it he's too angry? He's alienated too many would-be allies?
I think it's because, I think for one, the voting public has changed a lot. And I think that whereas he was an outsider and a maverick in 2000 when hardly anyone else, any other Republicans, were supporting campaign finance reform, now he's the opposite. Now he is sort of supporting the president's policy that is very unpopular. And so I think he's gone from being a maverick to being more status quo. And so I think all those independent voters that loved him in 2000 now don't see that independent streak in him as much. Though, to some degree, you have to say it is a bit maverick to say you want more troops in Iraq because he's one of the only people saying it.
Right.
But I think that's why. I think that it's sort of, you know, when you hold any color up against a background, the background really affects it, and that's what's going on with McCain.
And he probably has burned the people in his own party so badly who are afraid that he will not be loyal and that he'll become some sort of wacky independent again. So he probably has... He's lost to whoever might be on the left side of the aisle in the independents, and he's probably never going to regain the trust of the GOP base, I would think.
You know, it's funny. Some people in the base do like him and have started to take to him a little bit. But because he has been pro-life for a long time, although he's much more adamantly pro-life now than he used to be back in 2000. He had that famous quote where he said that if his daughter was in that situation, that it would be her choice what she would do. But now he's saying that he would like to overturn Roe versus Wade. Now, those two views aren't mutually exclusive necessarily, but they certainly are two different ends of the rhetorical spectrum. Shows where he's been and where he's going.
All right. Just before we say farewell for today, I would just like to ask you this. Were you a fan of Little House on the Prairie growing up?
We haven't talked about this.
No, yeah. I'm sorry. Have I hit a vein?
No, I was a very large fan of Little House on the Prairie, and it's one of my go-to anecdotes about how that show ended, but I don't know where you're going with it.
Well, no, I'm just going to, well, here's the thing. I will just sort of back off and just let you make your observation now, and then I'll weigh in with mine, which will probably be anticlimactic. what is your go-to anecdote about Little House on the Prairie?
You happen to know how that show ended?
Well, I assume a fire or some sort of smallpox. That was every other episode on that program.
Yeah, they did always have that. It's true. No, it was fantastic. A lot of people didn't. I actually have won several bets by betting this with people, and so can your listeners. That what happened is some company started buying up land around the town, and it turned out some convoluted thing where they never really owned their land to begin with. It was all a big legal, you know, fiasco. But anyway, so this landowner buys up a Walnut Grove and says he's going to start basically charging people to live there. It's all convoluted. But so what they decide to do is everyone decides to leave the town. But while they're doing it, they're going to blow up all of the buildings so that this new landowner won't get them.
And really?
It's a fantastic crescendo where they all drag these long lines of dynamite. They've got the one dynamite box like Wile E. Coyote, and they all step up and just blast away.
Oh, Jesus Christ, really?
I
really, honestly, and I mean this sincerely, and people who know me will know that I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I really don't know how I lived this long and didn't know that. That's exactly the sort of thing that I live to be able to tell. Now, I do have to ask you this. First of all, where are you exactly that you are wagering about how the Little House on the Prairie series ended? Exactly what sort of bars and nightclubs do you frequent where this is like a bet that's made?
I'll tell you what, you can bring it up anywhere. It started in the South Carolina State House, which may make some sense, but, you know, even at a biker bar, people know about Little House on the Prairie, and people do not believe that Laura Ingalls blew up her house, which she did.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's outstanding. They're all mad. They're all marching through the town. It's great.
Sort of like a Blazing Saddles type. Really, all they're missing is Dom DeLuise showing up with a megaphone in his hand.
That's right. See, you know, I've always interpreted it as the fact that the writers, and this was one of those reunions, like they ended the series, but then they had movies and they planned to have movies afterward. But I sort of interpreted that the writers were like, we are sick. We cannot write this anymore. What can we do to really finally put the nail in the coffin of this show? And so they decided to blow up the set.
Well, you know what? Wait, back in the day, as the kids say, when Family Ties went off the air, and this is of course long before Michael J. Fox was diagnosed with Parkinson's or whatever, but they did the Michael Gross, who played Stephen Keaton, the father on Family Ties, has said repeatedly in interviews since then that they asked the writers, and they at one point seriously considered killing off the entire Keaton family in a plane crash.
Oh, my God.
Because they didn't want to have any reunions. He's like, we didn't want to have any dopey Brady Bunch-type reunion movies, which I think they did anyway. I think they ended up having, like, the family, the Keatons go to Europe or something. I think they did a one-off reunion made-for-TV movie where the Keatons go to Paris. But the writers at one point seriously considered killing the Keatons in a massive plane crash. Okay, well, this completely overshadows. I was just going to tell you this, that we have this fax machine where we get you know, we get the press releases and the you know, interview, people asking us to interview whatever schleppy, the comedians or whoever are coming to town. And this is what I got this morning. They wanted me to announce that coming, we have a nightclub here, and coming to this club in Portland next Friday, a night of comedy with Alison Arngrim, Nellie Olson of Little House on the Prairie fame.
That is fantastic.
And there's this really butch-looking picture of her, flanked by pictures of her as Nellie Olson, as a young girl. And I swear to God, I'm going to read this right off the page so you'll know that I'm not lying. David G. Wash presents A Night of Comedy with Alison Arngrim, subtitled Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. I swear to you, that's what it says. And I'm repeating this journalist to journalist now. I would not fabricate such things.
Oh, that is brilliant. Wow. And she looked, how old is she now?
I would say 90. I don't know. You got to figure if she was, let's say, 12, 13, 14 in the mid-70s, she's got to be, you know, whatever, 45 now.
Right.
It's a really, really blurry, like, Xerox of a Photoshopped picture to begin with. So she doesn't even appear to have any features. Her face just appears to be one smooth nub. So I'm unclear about what she actually looks like, but I would encourage you to keep an eye out. Who knows? Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, A Night of Comedy with Alison Arngrim, Nellie Olson of Little House on the Prairie, may be coming to your town, Lisa Gard.
I can only hope so.
Who knew when we began this call talking about the Iraq funding bill that we were going to end up talking about blowing up Walnut Grove and Nellie Olson? That's really what makes this segment great. Lisa Goddard, enjoy the rest of your day, and we will have speaks with you very soon.
Excellent. And, Sarah, I think you're adorable. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa. All right, there you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, fantastic. How great was that call? Come on. Best Lisa Goddard call ever. I'm saying hands down right now. Best call ever. Blowing up Walnut Grove.
The Michael Landon was no saint page is missing from her autobiography.
Really?
Yeah, it looks like it was removed by someone.
Wait, I don't understand.
Well, I'm on her website.
Are you
website.
On Nellie Olson's homepage?
Mm-hmm. And one of the pages is Michael Landon was no saint. And
so, oh, it's like a link and it doesn't go anywhere?
The page cannot be found.
It's been hacked by the Michael Landon Brigade. The Michael Landon Guerrilla Front. Should we try to get her on the show?
Yes.
The lightning fast response. Sarah, did you even watch Little House on the Prairie? Is that before your time?
No, I watched it.
It's on every night.
What channel? I don't even know. That's right. That's right. It is. I saw I was flipping by the other week and I saw that. All right. Well, let's see. Well, I don't even know who we would call about this.
I think you would contact your...
Your microphone is off.
Well, he has a website.
Well, and we've got the name of the venue here. You know, and actually the folks at the CAP, the Cascade AIDS Project folks, could probably do that too, because they're helping to present this. All right. So, let me we got a break here. Like, and then we still got these guys calling about stool.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say, except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
You know, I was always going to trim that down. Bruce Agler always complains that Scotty Center too long, but I need it now because the walk from your room to this room is like a mile. So
I have that other one in there, too. It's titled differently.
Oh, I found out how to find she has a management group here.
Really? Okay,
yeah.
Scotty. You must now be contacting Alison Arngrim, Little House on the Prairie's Nellie Olson.
Yes, a caller just called in and said you must do this. So if you're listening right now, which I know you are, here's how it happens. Because I didn't know about this until I heard about it this morning.
Well, see, there you go. That's why you got to be listening to this program every second. You never know what you're going to miss. You never know what you're going to miss if you tune up for even a moment. You won't know what to buy. You won't know where to shop. You won't know what we're doing. All right.
Wow,
so
how old is she now? I'm looking at a picture of her.
I'm guessing 45.
Yeah.
45 to 50.
She's, you know, not bad.
Well, see, it's so hard to tell. See, Sarah, look at this. You can't. She's featureless and this bad Xerox. It's so hard to tell.
She looks like a younger Phil Spector.
You know who she looks like?
Genius.
I can't think of her name now. She was in The Sound of Music. Judy. What was?
Julie
it?
Andrews.
Yeah.
No.
Kind of like that.
Shirley Jones. She looks more like Shirley Jones.
A little bit. I see that.
Boy, how hot was Shirley Jones?
She still doesn't look bad.
Shirley Jones, I would still completely
do Shirley Jones. Florence Henderson, she doesn't look too bad considering.
Everybody do her. Everybody on earth. Men, women.
Children.
Plants.
No, that's horrible.
Did you just say that?
No, I didn't.
You're right. Okay, get out. And take this, get out and take this Nellie Olson thing with you.
Go get her, Scotty.
Oh, speaking of which,
We'll get it. We have to break. We'll talk to you later. All right, so there you go.
You go get that Nelly Olsen, Scotty J.
And then go buy a bath mat. All right, it's 503-733-2970. And I haven't gotten Alexander or Jeff. God damn, I suck. Alexander, Jeff, I've failed you. If you want to hang on, we'll get you after this. I swear to God. I swear to holy God. To holy God almighty. We'll come back. We'll talk to Alexander, Jeff, and then we will have Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. It's AM 570 Solid State Radio.
The message is Mars needs women.
We interrupt this record to bring you a special bulletin. The reports of a flying saucer hovering over the city have been confirmed.
All right, it's the Rick Emerson Show, 503-733-2970. Scotty just hustled on out of here, intent on booking Nelly Olsen.
The happiest day of my life.
Not really. 503-733-2970. It will be pretty great, though. That's next Friday, right? So if we interviewed her next Friday... Okay, how bizarre is this? Because, now, I'm not entirely sure about this, but I believe... I don't even want to say it out loud. There's a possibility. We might be talking to George Carlin. We're definitely going to be giving away tickets. We're giving away tickets to Carlin, George Carlin, all next week. We'll have a big announcement about that tomorrow, by the way. There's going to be sort of a twist on that. So we're going to have a big, not a twist. It's something kind of cool that we're starting. So that's going to be tomorrow. But we're giving away George Carlin tickets next week. I think there's a possibility we might be talking to Carlin next Friday. And then I think we're also talking to Alice Cooper next Friday. And how weird if we were also talking to Nelly Olsen next Friday. I might just have to go kill...
What? Showcase of stars.
I might have to kill myself afterward. Really, where can you go? Let's do this one call and then we'll begin the news hour. Why, hello, Alexander.
Why, hello, Rick. Quick little comment on your duplex story from yesterday.
Oh, God. All right, yes.
I'm the furniture maker. I make stools.
Yes, yes, you do.
And sometimes people want customized stools for something special, like playing a video game system.
Yes.
And I might be able to put, I imagine that there would be one of these Wii stools, as I like to call them, in the duplex.
Wii stools. Yes.
Is that really?
Is that it?
I can give you more if you want.
Give us one more. One more pass here.
So, I heard that it was giving some difficulty to her sexual relationship.
No.
Prank call.
But I just dumped her. All right, there you go.
Thank you.
And then he just hangs up.
I barely knew her.
Alexander. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Let's just put that whole segment. I should have just, shouldn't have even gone there. Shouldn't have even picked up the phone that time. Ladies and gentlemen, your president, your prophet, your seer, and revelator.
Time for the Rick Emerson News Hour from AM 970 Solid State.
My phone indicator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Following approval by the House, the Senate has approved a war funding bill that the president promises to veto. That's right. They might give him a little bit of money, but they're setting a date for withdrawal. Republican Senator Sexby Chenlis.
Really?
Hmm?
I know he's from the South. He's got to be.
You can tell his governor dressed him as a girl as a child. Says his vote just shows that the Democrats want to run away and stop funding the troops.
The men and women of the Third ID simply don't agree with the Democrats who want to tuck tail and run.
Sexby Chenlis, Esquire. It says Esquire after his name. And he wears like a...
Please wait in the drawing room for your mother.
Oh, but governor, and then he wears those, what are those, pince-nez glasses, like gyro Gearloose used to wear. All right. Senator Saxby says politicians need to listen to the generals on the ground on how to win this war.
The important thing that should be done right now is that the bills be sent to the president, which provides funding for the war. And that the war continue in the way that General David Petraeus told us yesterday, it needs to continue.
You know what he sounds like? He sounds, was it George Wallace?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Segregation now, segregation forever. He sounds just like that guy. Jesus, what a strange part of the country that is. Yeah, Sexby Chapless, that totally is an afternoon disc jockey name in the South.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, way to go, Scotty. All right.
Meanwhile, the Republican Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas says, if a deadline is hit, the enemy will declare victory. Over America.
A deadline will not work, and you cannot do that, and you cannot foist upon the president, and it will not work in that region. As soon as
you
set
more of a
deadline,
whiner.
They said Al-Qaeda to declare victory, and people in the region will start looking for security in other places.
Who cares?
They already moved out.
Seriously, who cares if Al-Qaeda declares victory? F them. I don't care what they do. So what? I can declare that I'm a ham sandwich. It doesn't mean that I am one. I mean, to the best of my knowledge, anyway. And I say to you today, I am a ham sandwich. That's a joke inside like three other jokes. I am a donut.
So let's talk to the top general in Iraq, at least this week. He said the situation there is extremely challenging, but progress has been made. And during a press conference this morning, General Petraeus told reporters the operational challenge in Iraq is, quote, the most challenging and complex I have ever seen.
A deadline will not...
That was Sam Brownback again.
Nope. Success will take continued commitment, perseverance, and sacrifice, all to make possible an opportunity for the all-important Iraqi political actions that are the key to long-term solutions to Iraq's many problems.
First of all, we're causing Iraq's many problems. Secondly, the Iraq political, what did it call it? The Iraq political goal, that just consists of blowing things up. I mean, that's really all that is. And they're doing most of that themselves.
Well, it is kind of fun, day in, day out.
No, it's, I think
when you wake up every day in Iraq, what are you supposed to do?
I think they just have sort of a sports book and you just
bet on all my arms, all my legs? Well, this is a good day.
Just walked out of the bookie and just wager on what's going to be blown up by the following morning.
I go out and buy a squashed tomato, but I might be beheaded. So I'll sit here and wait for freedom, patiently.
Do you want to leave the house, Akbar?
No, I am waiting for the Americans to drop off freedom. It should be here by 4.
4:30, the absolute latest. The thing about that message you play, that sounds for all the world. Can you play a little bit of that again, just like the first 3 or 4 seconds?
Sure.
Success will take continued commitment, perseverance, and sacrifice.
That sounds can be a millionaire.
That sounds for all the world like a voice greeting that you would get. Like when you call, thank you for calling the Department of Water and Transportation. Our business hours are between, if you are calling about sewage flooding, it just sounds like some message he's left somewhere. So like when you call the government and ask why we can't get anything done in Iraq, that's like the message that you get. They've left that for us at the front.
Oh, all right. But you know whose fault this is, says General Petraeus?
Why?
It is the media.
Oh.
The media, because they never report on the successes, only the bad things.
Many areas have a sense of sort of incremental progress. And that is not transmitted at all, of course. It will never break through the noise and the understandable coverage given to it in the press of a sensational attack that kills many Iraqis.
Well, of course not. We've got all this Nellie Olson news to talk about. Seriously, I don't have time for it. I'm only one man. I don't have time to do everything.
Meanwhile, the president takes the high road by talking about malaria. Yes, malaria is entirely preventable and treatable, says the president at a White House malaria celebration.
Today, to call on nations around the world to join us in a great humanitarian effort. And it's a day to remind our fellow citizens that we help somebody live a life. It strengthens our soul and enhances our spirit.
Is he really holding a press conference about malaria?
Yes. Malaria Appreciation Day.
And if only we had some passage that would allow us to go right through Panama, too. That would also be fantastic.
All right. Apparently, somebody dies every 30 seconds from malaria.
That's not true.
That's made up.
That's a...
This is from Malaria Awareness Day. Imagine somebody's working in the malaria office, sending out resumes, hoping for a better day.
I was just going to say, how do you end up working there?
I don't know.
How do you end up working at Malaria Awareness Day?
And you aspire to work for the Leprosy Foundation?
Seriously, that's like...
Is that a ticket to nowhere on the resume?
Now, Buttercup, I know you've been looking for a job this summer. They're not hiring at the car wash. Now, my friend Jeff has gotten you a job somewhere. How do you feel about malaria?
It needs to be defeated.
How depressing it must be to work in that office. Just walk in, you sit in the cubicle every day and weep. You just walk in and shut the door.
Imagine the office politics.
Look around for things that you can cut yourself with.
Well, they must have come up with a poster that says one person dies every 30 seconds from malaria.
Does it have a cat hanging from a branch?
It does not. Probably a smiling skull with malaria written on the forehead. This could be you.
And a puppy peeking out of a happy bag.
Mm-hmm.
Malaria. It will kill you. That's it. Oh, God. Well, there you go. So, you know, look, at least you don't work at the Malaria Kills Somebody Every 30 Seconds Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That's a made-up statistic anyway. I don't believe that. That's like that. What is it? I mean, and liberals are just as bad. There's that stupid thing of, you know, 1,000 acres of rainforest are cut down every 10 seconds or whatever. That's stupid, which is just clearly retarded. Because if that was the case, they would have, like, I mean, there'd be no trees left by, like, 10 years ago. I mean, I think somebody took that stat one time about how 1,000 acres of rainforest vanish a day. Or so that they calculated that if that were the case, it would have only taken, like, 4.5 weeks or something for them all to be gone. God, malaria. There you go.
Fantastic.
It's a hidden epidemic. Apparently. I thought we'd cured malaria. Don't we have a cure?
But hasn't it taken your mind off the war?
It really has.
It worked. We don't have Rosie today. We have to talk about malaria.
Malaria kills human interest in the war.
All right. There you go. Here's Tim Riley. Well, John McCain made the talk show rounds. He was on because he officially declared his candidacy, but nobody really cared because it was buried in the Rosie O'Donnell story.
He was buried inside Rosie O'Donnell.
But he did the best he could, appearing on Larry King last night.
My health is excellent. I've worked 24/7. I'm happy. We're having a lot of fun. And there's nothing I enjoy more than this kind of campaigning.
Yeah, he sounds like he enjoys it. He sounds like a big ball of laughs.
From there was onto the hot seat on The Daily Show. McCain raised some eyebrows during the interview when he joked about bringing Stewart a special gift from a Baghdad market, which he recently visited. He said, quote, "Here is another nice little IED. That's an improvised explosive device to put under your desk." Soon after, Congressman John Murtha said McCain should apologize to Stewart. McCain laughed heartily at the idea.
Please. Because I was joking around on a comedy show, I can't respond to that kind of hysteria. I'm going to continue to use humor, particularly when I'm on a comedy show. And if Congressman Murtha or anybody can adjust to that, then lighten up and get a life.
He does sound like a funny guy. It doesn't sound like there's any moisture in his body. I think he's entirely made out of sticks and leaves. He's just made out of papyrus. I don't believe there's any wetness in him at all anywhere. All right. Well,
Senator McCain says nobody has a sense of humor anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We really have lost our sense of humor here and our sense of balance. I'm going to continue to use humor. It was very important to me in many difficult times in my life, and I'll continue to do it, and we're going to continue to have fun.
Yes, he says losing the presidency by having a sense of humor is a chance he'll have to take.
And if that somehow is harmful to my presidency, then that's certainly a penalty I'll pay. But I think most Americans kind of enjoy humor from time to time, and I'm confident that they'll enjoy my feeble attempts, even though it gets a bit corny at times.
I don't even know who is he talking to there?
I guess John Stewart.
Some guy. All right, well, I didn't watch it.
I didn't either.
Well, it'll
be on tonight at 8 o'clock.
The thing about it is that I don't need to, God bless John Stewart and Stephen Colbert and all that, I don't need to watch The Daily Show anymore because all of that stuff is on YouTube. It's like when Stephen Colbert just eviscerated Russell Simmons the other day, and I didn't need to watch it because it was on YouTube like 5 minutes later, so I don't need to actually watch whole programs anymore.
Well, apparently a British newspaper reports that the army in Britain is reconsidering their decision to allow Prince Harry to fight in Iraq. The defense ministry would not confirm the report in the Sun newspaper, saying that all operational deployments are under constant review. That means he stays home, apparently.
So was he wanting to fight and they're just stopping him?
Yes.
All right. Well, yeah, because you can't have...
Well, you know, he doesn't look like anyone in that royal family.
He does look as though he fell from a different tree.
Yeah.
You're entirely... You'd think that they'd want to get him killed. I mean,
that's what I was thinking.
To the front! It'll be good for morale and things. Go! Go now! It'll be like that, like in 300. There's that that guy who, you know, brings his son. Is this not your oldest son? I don't know if I'm probably the only one here who's seen 300. But he... But, you know, he's a guy who brings his son to fight for Sparta. And what's his name says, the guy says, well, is this not your oldest child that you bring to fight? And then the father just says, yes, but I have others at home to replace him, which is great. Fantastic, just totally like, F him. That is, that's totally what I figured they'd be doing with him, because you're right, he doesn't, he does look as though Di was fishing out of a different pond for a little. I mean, I don't know that that's the case, but, I'm just speculating. Lots of email coming in about Nellie Olson, by the way. This says Rick. Let's see, where the hell did it go? Those about Nellie Olson. You must get Nellie Olson in studio. You must, it says in a gigantic lavender font. I rarely care about who you want to interview. Your musicians mean nothing to me. Teeny Others was cool, but Nellie, goddamn. I watch that show every week. I own all the DVDs. To my utter shame, I have to be out of town that weekend for bowling with my husband's company. I hate bowling, but blah, 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 blah. I'm going to be out of town. Now it's going to cause me to miss her talk. And it just goes on about how we have to have Nellie Olson in the studio. Well, we're getting Scotty right on that. We're going to do the very best we can. Rick, this email says, Sarah's photo on the back of the Mercury reminds me of Barbara Feldon on the Tiger Skin TV ad for on the Tiger Skin Rug TV ad for hair cream. He says my gray hair is showing, but asked him, "No, I'm down with Barbara Feldon. I don't remember."
She was Agent 99.
Exactly, that's where I know her from. Agent 99 from Get Smart. She's still alive, by the way.
Yeah.
Don Adams, not so much. She's still alive. I don't remember Barbara Feldon being on a Tiger Skin Rug though. I only know her from that television program in which she was very attractive. I could kind of see you having a Barbara Feldon thing going on here.
I'm looking at it. I don't see it.
Here's the weird thing, is I'm holding this Portland Mercury up to you, and it doesn't look anything like you. That's kind of the weird thing, is it kind of looks like maybe your older sister. Weird. All
my
right.
Older naughty sister.
You said that, not me. Here's Tim Riley.
So, let's see. Let's get back to John McCain on The Daily Show last night, joking about bombing in Iraq.
Let's see. Which one have I seen most on your show? I think maybe shopping in Baghdad. I had something really picked out for you, too. It's a nice,
really?
Yes, a nice little IED to put under your desk.
It's very lovely of you. Thank you. That's why we have the dogs here.
By the way, the dog wasn't there, Chloe. I wanted to kick it.
Well, that's just weird. All right. Well, there you go. The good news is that we don't have to worry about that guy for too much longer. In 6 months, we will no longer have to care about John McCain or whatever it is he's doing. And you know that guy, John McCain is just like one bad day away from being arrested for beating a meter maid or something. It's only a matter of time before he's booked for assaulting somebody. I'm sorry, Mr. McCain. I don't have correct change for your purchase. But wah, bam! And out
kind of a Jack Nicholson thing.
Totally. And out's going to come McCain, and he's going to brain somebody with it. All right, here's Tim Riley.
This comes to us from Florida.
Oh, I didn't know. How was no one told me?
A woman kicked a 72-year-old man in the groin and hit him with a shovel after he refused to give her money for beer. The man was standing outside a Naples gas station when Melissa Lorraine Small approached him and asked for money. The man told police that when he refused, she kicked him. Small then grabbed a shovel from the man's truck. He told police she tried to hit him in the head, but he blanked it with his left hand. After the attack, the man drove himself to the hospital. One of his fingers has been dislocated. They found the attack woman and charged her with aggravated battery with great bodily harm or permanent disability and aggravated battery on a person 65 and older.
She had run around hitting old people.
Fantastic. Meanwhile, Vermont remains the nation's healthiest state. According to the latest ratings, they took the honor for the sixth time in a row. Vermont has good access to primary care, low teen birth rate, high percentage of citizens covered by health insurance. Vermont was followed by Minnesota, Massachusetts, Maine, and New Hampshire, and Oregon is number 17. Between New Jersey and Virginia, but better than California.
Well, everything's better than California. In California, if you're not shot by noon, your house is going to burn down or you're going to be attacked by some swarm of killer bees. I mean, really, in California, it's like a 3 in 4 chance you're going to be wounded by something by the end of every day.
That's that.
All right. Have you heard this? I'm just seeing this now. Somebody said this to me. Have you seen this? It's some, it's a 911 call. Let me see. Where did this go?
Oh, this is the boy who pretended to be the husband.
Do you have this? Do you have this?
I've seen it, but I haven't heard it.
Let me see if I have this. And I'm, because
it was part of a larger report from a television station. That's why I didn't use it.
Apparently, oh, really? Is it the...
It might be.
This is the website, so I might have to wade through a lot of crap.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the case. Apparently, it's a child calling 911.
From the suburbs.
Of course. Washington County receives a 911 call from some...
Is this true?
From a kid claiming to be a 21-year-old husband. He calls the 911 operator and claims to be, quote, Mr. Goober. I'm calling for help. My name is Mr. Goober. Let me see.
I'm the booby doctor's cousin.
He's Goober. Oh, it doesn't want to play, of course. Okay.
Darn it, old heck.
Let me just play this. Let's see.
Hi, this is Mr. Goober.
Hey, do you have an emergency?
No, but I have a question.
Okay.
If someone falls off a bike and, like, gets really injured, do you call the medical?
Yeah, if somebody's hurt, we can send medical.
Mr. Goober.
Okay, bye.
No, don't hang up. Don't hang up, okay?
What?
Just a second.
I'm going to punish you.
Yeah?
Just a second.
Hmm?
Hold on.
This is Mr.
That's not an officer. Hold on just a second here.
Now he's in trouble.
It's going to be a tasing.
Little boy.
It was a C or a K?
Goober.
Not you. Hold on.
Is that Goober? Are you of the Chippewa Falls Goobers?
Okay, so Mr. Goober.
Yeah?
Owls.
Oh, that's genius. Oh, I'm going to have to play this one if I can get it later.
How old are you?
21.
You're 21? You sound a lot younger.
Well, a lot of people say that.
Okay. But you're okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so did somebody fall off a bike?
Yeah, but their mother helped them up.
Okay, so they didn't need any help, huh?
No.
Captain McGuire, so gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you live at this? What's your address?
922.
What's your address?
922.
Apparently there's some payoff we're waiting for here where the mom comes home and catches the kid calling 911.
922?
Yeah.
922 what?
Any second now?
22234.
Hey, that's not really an address.
I'm sorry. Hold on just a minute. My wife wants to talk to me.
My wife.
Did somebody play this on the air before?
I don't know. No, this is from Fox 12.
I'm sorry.
Well, hold on. Let me talk to her.
Let me talk to Mrs. Goober.
Well, you can talk to her already. She's in a hurry.
She doesn't...
Okay, well, tell her to slow down and talk to the 911 operator for a second.
She doesn't really have time for details, ma'am.
Okay.
Oh, for the love of God. I can't tell whether it's buffering or whether it's...
Well, people in suburbs have more time than you see.
Seriously. This does not really tend to underscore the emergency that Mr. Goober is Mr. Goober is calling about. Where do you suppose he got Goober? I wonder if he just...
Hello?
Yes?
Hi there, it's 911.
Yes.
And someone called here. Do you know who called?
No.
Okay. Do you have a husband named Mr. Goober?
No.
Do you have a child who might be...
Anthony?
Anthony Goober.
Oh, that's the end. Do you have a husband named Mr. Goober? That's fantastic.
Not anymore.
Oh, all right. Okay, well, there you go. I apologize. That, edited down, that'll be a lot funnier. All right, here you go. It's Tim Wright, Ministry of Truth. I'm sorry, I had no idea that would be like a 40-minute call we had to wait through.
That was very interesting.
This is Mr. Goober.
All right. I might have missed a part. Can you play that again, please?
Let's do one more, then we'll break.
I guess maybe before after they had dirty dining to make up for that.
I wonder if they played that whole thing on the air. Oh, God. All right, fantastic. Children from heaven, aren't they? Let's do one more story here, and then we'll break and resume on the other side.
Well, it's time for some backyard grilling tips. It's that time of the year. It's time to throw another shrimp on the Barbie. That, according to celebrity chef John Ashton, never heard of him before, but apparently he's a celebrity. He is now, anyway, in the soundbite, who says now that summer's almost here, it's encouraging for everyone to fire up the grill. You know, grilling your meals is a popular and affordable way to put healthy meals on the table.
They're relatively inexpensive grills now as well, and it's a great way to cook. You know, when we think about cooking healthier, we think about grilling and having fun on the grill as well. And it's a great time, you know, on a sunny day, there's nothing better than...
having fun on the grill. And let me just say that I'm tired of Australian accents at this point.
Well, it's better than people trying to catch crocodiles. What harm can he possibly cause?
Did you see that story the other day about those? And I can laugh because they were asking for it. Did you see that story the other day about those kids who were beating a crocodile with a stick and using slingshots to fire things at him?
Did it work?
Oh, if by worse, it means you irritated the it irritated the crocodile to the point to where he dragged the children into the swamp and ate them. It's fantastic. And it's, the children were devoured by a swarm of crocodiles. And I don't feel bad about it at all, because by everybody's acknowledgement of, I guess, one of their horrified playmates who looked on, they had spent about 15 minutes hitting the crocodile in the face with a stick. And the crocodile just sort of took it, and then it just started, had enough. And I think all they retrieved was like a shoe or something from the crocodile.
You can imagine that one call. Oh, this must be Mr. Goober again.
It's so tempting to be Mr. Goober from now on in all my daily proceedings.
Well, there are a couple of ingredients that serious grillers should always have on hand.
The most important thing is salt and pepper. That's going to win you straight away. You know, if you season it correctly with salt and pepper, you've got yourself off to a good start with a hamburger.
I would have never thought.
I don't really believe that man is Australian.
But he's a barbecuing celebrity.
Sure he is. Well, but why wouldn't he be? What with his exotic spice recipes?
And the most fun thing to do is to cook fruit on a grill.
A fresh pineapple. Just take that pineapple and core it and grill it on there.
He says.
As you smell that beautiful pineapple fragrance will fill the air around you, you bring that off with some ice cream and you slowly eat it and just close your eyes and you'll think you're in Hawaii.
I'm kind of unnerved by that guy. Does it sound like he really loves food?
He does.
All right, let's never play that again. Let's take a break now, shall we? It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll be back after this. Don't go anywhere. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Don't forget to pick a copy up of the... Pick a copy up. Either. Don't forget to pick up a copy of the new Portland Mercury. On the front it says the election issue. And on the back, our very own Sarah X. Dillon. It says here, Sarah X. Dillon, producer of the Rick Emerson Show, AM 970.
See, aren't you proud of me that I got that in there?
Totally, I am. I'm impressed that they did it. They never do that. We always say, will you please put the frequency in, and then they either put the name or the call letters or something that doesn't actually tell people where to listen. Or they just say a local radio station, or they just say they neglect it altogether. So you can pick it up. Also, she's mostly naked. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, a 47-year-old man has been killed in North Portland. The man lived in a transient camp. He was a white male. He had trauma to his body, and his death is being investigated as a homicide. Found late last night. An autopsy will be done at some point today. Meanwhile, it's time to talk about American Idol again, because that's what most of America is doing. Apparently, last night's two-hour Idol give-back special raised money through the phone lines, the internet, and corporate donations. It was filled with surprise performances and guest appearances by big-name celebrities, but the biggest shock came when Ryan Seacrest announced the results. Why, this is the wrong one.
I can hardly wait. Let me just...
let's try something else.
I don't know. See, here's the thing about this. I'm not laughing at you.
Yes.
I'm laughing with you.
Uh-huh.
As are we all. But here's, I can't see the screen from where you are, so I don't know what the manner of problem is right now. Is it that you're hitting the button and it doesn't play?
No, the manner of problem is it.
I mean, there's any number of things that could be going wrong over there.
Yes.
I just don't, it's, and I don't mean to knock CBS radio. I'm just saying in this bold new era of advanced technology, there's a whole grab bag of glitches that could be causing this this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that the cut, it won't load?
No, the cut isn't what it was supposed to be.
Is the cut of something entirely different?
Yes.
Well, let's play it out of context.
All right.
Introduce
That's
it.
That's what the one campaign is about. People who you wouldn't normally expect hang out with each other. You know, hip-hop people and
Bono.
Soccer moms, punk rockers and church people and, you know, Irish rock stars on American Idol.
So then Seacrest apparently gave a tally of the donations.
Now, including the corporate donations and what you've done already tonight, I just got this figure, we are almost at $30 million raised to charity.
Now, so they're raising the money. I'm so clear. But, and I don't
for
even
For children.
Really, I don't. Is it for children?
It's always for children.
What children where?
Children with malaria? It doesn't say.
It's just some children somewhere.
Dying. It's never in this country.
You know,
we care more about the children of the world than we do in our own. They can be dying here like flies. We don't care. Some poor country where people live in the desert and have no food. Meanwhile, Celine Dion sings I Can Dream with Elvis Presley. All right.
If I can dream, I'll hold on the sun.
I don't understand any of this.
It is a real cluster. I have no idea what's going on.
Well, just in
they're raising money here for children, apparently.
Well, all right, I guess.
And it was on television.
Okay.
And Celine Dion was there singing with Elvis.
Right.
Okay.
The show was full of surprise performances.
Apparently so.
So Elvis came back to be on American Idol, as he would want to be.
Next, Julius Caesar. This doesn't make any sense at all. All right.
So this was a high-tech duet featuring Celine Dion singing I Can Dream with footage of a 1968 Elvis Presley special.
Oh, that's Elvis. That's Vegas Elvis. That's a Vegas comeback black jacket Elvis. Okay.
Ellen DeGeneres hosted some of the live performances from the Walt Disney Concert Hall. She also donated $100,000 of her own money.
God bless her.
And asked the other rich people to do the same. Bono closed the show by meeting with Idol hopefuls and discussing his charity foundation, the One Campaign. So here's
I wonder what this, because we already played this, right?
Mm-hmm.
This cut actually came up when it was supposed to be Ryan Seacrest, so I wonder what...
Aha! Uh-huh.
I don't know what that aha means.
It's playing the same wrong one again.
Fantastic.
So let's listen.
Okay.
No, here's a Ryan Seacrest.
America voted. Chris, you're safe.
Makes no sense.
I told you this was going to be shocking. Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm shocked.
It is very shocking, believe me. Jordan, you are also safe.
Why, that doesn't seem possible. I don't understand what just happened.
Well, they're all out of... You can mix them up together and try to create some kind of continuity in your own mind.
This is sort of a do-it-yourself story.
It is.
This is sort of like a... It's like one of those Ravel models you would buy as a kid, where you go home and you follow the instructions, you assemble your own... you assemble your own Buick.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is. Just create your own American Idol story with all of the composite and the component parts that we have just... just giving you there.
I'm not touching this machine again for the rest of the day.
All you need to know, Tim, is that they're doing something for children somewhere who live elsewhere.
All right. I care about people who live elsewhere.
Seriously, look, I understand that there are problems everywhere in the world. As Alice Cooper once said, we have problems right here in River City. He said, quoting that guy, Robert Preston. All I'm saying is there really ought to be, wouldn't you just love to see, just to see what the American, what am I trying to say here? I sound like one of those sound bites. I'm just completely out of context and I make no sense. I wonder what the reaction of Americans would be if something like American Idol, if they did something like that, where it's... Okay, I hate to do this. I really honestly do hate to...
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy.
I do have a point here. I'm really not just doing this to torture everyone.
Mount the Jack Squad!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
I do think Scotty's a little hungover today, though, because he was here at like 9:30 trying to overcompensate. Hi, Scotty. How are you?
Yeah, show up early when you're hung, right?
Yeah. No, quit saying hung.
You hate it when you say hung.
I don't think that means what you think it means. All right, you watch American Idol.
Yeah, but I'm starting to lose interest fast.
Did you watch last night?
This whole year just kind of blows.
Did you watch last night?
I did not.
Oh, you may go.
You said you were going to try and be nice to
someone. No, I was going to ask him about American Idol. What am I bringing in here for? My health? I was going to ask him what charity they were playing for. I was going to ask him who they were benefiting last night. Because here's my question, and this is really a rhetorical question. There's no way to know because it probably never happened. But it does make me wonder what would happen on one of these shows. What the reaction from the public would be is if they said, "Look, tonight on American Idol, we are raising $30 million, and it's all going to go to American people who have no health care." You know what I mean?
Or we pretend that really doesn't happen.
But that'd be awesome. Saying,
but how great would that be? And again, I'm not trying to be an ugly American. I understand that people in America, generally speaking, pretty decent life. Not everybody, but most folks. And I'm not disputing that there are problems in the rest of the world and that there are other countries and other continents where there are real issues to deal with. I'm not disputing any of that. I'm simply saying the reality of bad situations in other parts of the world does not negate the existence of bad situations for people in this country. Tim is totally right. We don't ever seem to talk about that. And I, as a big bleeding heart, I'm not opposed to helping people in other parts of the world. I mean, that's why a big, huge, big-ass bite of my paycheck is gone every 15 days, because sections of that are, portions of our tax dollars go across the seas to rebuild things that we've recently blown into small pieces. I'm simply saying, I wonder what the American reaction would be if American Idol or any one of those big shows said, and by the way, all this week we are raising money and we're going to be giving it to Americans. We're going to be giving it to people here in the United States who don't have health care, for example, because that seems to be that's the biggest thing that we can all sort of agree on.
Yes.
So the answer. Who was American Idol raising money for last night?
I believe it was for poor kids in Africa.
It always
because they seriously had Ryan Seacrest and Simon in Africa.
Are you really seriously?
Yeah, serious. The question I have is, what third world country needs $30 million? It's like a penny to buy a loaf of bread.
Then we drop bags of rice from airplanes.
Jesus Christ. All right, I love you guys. Bye.
Thank you, sir. The common wisdom of the plain-spoken American. That really is true. I never thought about that.
Well,
if you can't feed a village with $30 million... Okay, now it's just pissing me off, because with $30 million, you're totally right about that. With $30 million, you should be able to feed an entire African country for like 100 years.
Yeah. Well, that and we don't give them utensils to cook. We drop flour. Do they have the energy to stir something in the mixing bowl and put it in an oven? Or do they have pots and pans at home or a spatula?
We need to drop ovens.
Right.
We need to drop ovens on Africa.
Why do we? That's why they're starving. We're dropping them food, but they don't have any pots and pans or stoves.
I would eat, but I have no whisk. We need to drop the melon ballers and stoves.
So, the tarantulas eat all this stuff.
I think that's our whole... We ought to raise money just to bombard Africa with ovens. Just to drop stoves all over the Serengeti.
Or something easy to eat, like Pop-Tarts. Leave them out in the sun for a couple of minutes. You don't need an oven or a toaster.
I mean, look, I know that and there's some crackpot listeners out there that just send me these long, long encyclopedic screeds whenever they think that I'm factually incorrect about something, as I am most of the time. But
not about the facts.
No, I really know. We're about broad, sweeping generalizations that may or may not have their roots in accuracy. I am not trying to be an ugly American here. But I guess we should probably talk about this in another time, because it's otherwise just going to consume the whole news hour. But this really does raise a whole lot of really interesting questions to me. Like, first of all, What? You're so right about this, too. Why are every news story, it's like a soldier in the back of a truck throwing a five-year-old a huge 50-pound bag of grain.
Now,
what is he
going
to do with that?
Wouldn't they be better off with a box of Hot Pockets? Give them what Americans eat.
Absolutely. Who wants chicken McNuggets?
Exactly.
Who wants some Popeye's chicken? Who wants some TGI Fridays?
Here's some rice. Oh, boy. Some rice.
Seriously. Who wants... Just, you know,
if you eat rice, you're hungry in the next hour.
Who wants a Gino's pizza roll?
There you go.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's a who wants a... God, what else? What else is just absolute fantastic, trashy American food? What is that thing? Who wants... What is A&W? There's that A&W up the street from my house. That's fantastic as well. Oh, all right. Anything in nugget form. Pizza nuggets, chicken nuggets. They got those beefsteak, those beef nugget things you can buy now from the Tillamook, whatever place. Doesn't matter. The Irish potato famine, we could have cured that whole... You see, that whole thing, unless we're going to give them grain so the Irish can plant their crops. You send the Irish just a big 20-piece nugget thing with one of those, like the big hot mustard vat on the side. Solve the whole thing.
Instead, a big bag of wheat.
Well, then,
what are certain people supposed to do
What are you supposed to do with wheat? And wheat is... look, I hate to just be full-on channeling Sam Kinison here, but it's as Sam Kinison went, it's sand! Nothing grows in sand! I mean, really? Trust me, I grew up in a desert. Nothing grows there. What did he say? You know what it's going to be 100 years from now? It's going to be sand! Send them U-Hauls. I know that this just makes us sound so ill-informed, but goddamn, it just doesn't make any sense now. I mean, you are right, first of all, in that you said that we ought to just send them fast food or just Hot Pockets or just Pop-Tarts or just a big Ziploc bag full of cheese. You know what I mean? Just something. What's this? It's a biscuit. Have it. You know, as opposed to just a big... What is it? Well, it's a 500-pound bag of dried lentils.
Don't send them corn. Send them candy corn.
And that's a fat-free food as well, Tim. I'll have you know that. So, A, I don't know why we don't just send them pre-made food.
Yeah.
And B... What was my B? B, do you remember when we had that, we offered that 25... This whole thing makes me furious now that I think about it. You remember we had that 25
Blame
million...
Blame it on Ryan Seacrest. He can handle
Goddamn
it.
Ryan Seacrest. Do you remember we had that $25 million bounty? I guess we still do, on the head of Osama bin Laden.
Happened to him?
Well, because it's goddamn pointless. You know why? Because they made this observation on MSNBC, I think, a couple weeks after they did that. That offering a $25 million bounty... On Osama bin Laden is ridiculous because nobody in that part of the world can conceive of what $25 million is. It's like offering Sarah a skillion dollars to do something. Sarah, I'm going to give you a skillion dollars. What does that even mean? You know, this is $25 million.
Wouldn't somebody rob that one bank with money?
What are you going to buy? If you live in Afghanistan and we give you some guy living in a thatched hut and we give you $25 million, seriously, How many beads or whatever can you buy? There's nothing left in that country to purchase.
Well, where do they go on vacation?
I buy dead donkey from brother-in-law. Now I'm richest man in all Afghanistan. There's nothing to buy. So the concept that $30 million will not feed, let's say, I mean, I don't know what they were raising money for. I don't know if it was Africa or South America or Asia, wherever. The idea that you can't go into, like, your typical Croatian village with $30 million and feed everybody until the end of time just doesn't make any sense. I'm just apoplectic with rage about this now.
Well, I think on American Idol, they ought to continue with what they do best, singing and kicking people off the show instead of raising money for starving people.
That's ridiculous. Exactly.
People always starve.
The moral is quit trying to help.
I mean, is there anyone in this room who doesn't know what to do not to starve?
You eat,
correct? Well, throwing money at the problem hasn't solved it, has it?
Why we ought to be throwing food at the problem? You're really right about that stove thing. What are they supposed to cook stuff in?
Right.
You don't. I mean,
are they supposed to go to Crate and Barrel and buy themselves some utensils to bake wheat in? I guess a barley and oats. That sounds like a feast.
They're not really going to Crate and Barrel. They're going to Two Sticks to Rub Together. That's the store they're going to.
Sticks and a skull.
Fantastic. Now I want some chicken and a pizza roll. I've just been talking about... Now I want an A&W float. All right.
We should raise money to send root beer floats to one of those countries.
I'm all for that.
Let's see. You know, this is the trademark gallows humor that makes the Rick Emerson Show such a hit with men 18 to 44. hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey.
What's up?
I'm here to calm your rage a little bit.
The whole thing it perplexes me now. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, half of the money is going to kids in Africa for food and for medical facilities. And then the other half is actually staying here in America.
So
going to help Katrina victims. And they had a food project in L.A. and schooling in the Appalachian Mountains.
Really?
Yeah, they really did.
Can't we just raise money to get the... How many people can be left in the Appalachians? Can't we just round them all up and put them on a flatbed and send them somewhere else? Jesus, God.
They had nice interviews with some of those fine folks down there. Yeah. It was interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I know the people are sometimes accused of trafficking in stereotypes, but seriously, I'm not going to tell you...
totally the stereotype.
I am not going to tell you that I've ever been to the Appalachians, but I got to tell you, I saw a fantastic... HBO did this really amazing documentary. I forget the name of it now. I believe it was called Up in the Mountain or something like that, but it was this two-hour documentary about, like, who lives in the... Like, in 2007, who lives in the Appalachians? And you know what? I got to tell you, it's exactly the kind of people you think live in the Appalachians. One tooth for a whole family.
Just seeing the movies.
Somehow they have enough money to buy tie-dyed Metallica shirts, though, and, like, really gaudy belt buckles.
And buy several pickups with which to decorate the front yard.
None of this speaks to the question, though, of if you've got $15 million, you could probably buy some of those countries for $15 million. You know what I mean?
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
You could buy a fleet of buses and drive them to where restaurants are plentiful.
Exactly.
Seriously.
And get them in the habit of eating on a regular basis.
Wherever. You know, it doesn't matter where you're. Again, you are going to go to Croatia, Nigeria, whatever. Get on the truck. We're going to Sizzler. Chris, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Well, if those countries had food, you wouldn't have to deal with it, but you have to buy it from countries that have food, like us, and food's not cheap, as well as you have to buy all the drugs from countries like us, which isn't cheap, so...
Well, I don't... But they,
even though
but they're
are
not,
cheap there, they don't have anything.
I'm so confused. I don't understand.
Well,
they don't have anything.
If African country A had food, we wouldn't have to take care of it for them. So when you buy food, you buy surplus American food, ship it over there. They don't have food there.
Yeah,
that's why they're starving.
I understand. I'm just saying,
but wouldn't one person tell the next person, if you have children, they will die from not eating?
Well, no, don't go thinking. You know, we ought to just rein that, you know, and here's the thing. We ought to just rein that whole problem. Wherever it exists on planet Earth, the problem, let me just tell you this. The problem,
we need to get a big band together to sing about it.
Wear a rubber. That's what our song is going to be. Our song is going to be called, that's going to be our big benefit song, Wear a Rubber. Mm-hmm. There is no problem on Earth that can't be solved with rubbers. Rubbers are the answer to everything.
This kind of money goes to is proper sex education for these people so that they can not get diseases and not over-procreate.
How's that working?
By the way, that's Chris who said these people. That was not the Rick Emerson who said that.
Poor people.
Yes.
But also, the reason they ship big bags of dried grain is because if you ship them a Big Mac, the Big Mac would rot in like a day.
That's not true.
Right?
You know, now listen to me now.
They didn't that happen.
Seriously, have you seen those MREs that the military eats, those meals ready to eat?
Yeah, those things are expensive. A big bag of grain is cheap. All you have to do is grind it up and make bread into it.
We just... This whole
they're
conversation
not making bread into it.
This whole
why are there no bread stores there?
This whole conversation.
Is there a bakery in Africa that people can go to and buy bread?
Yes,
why don't we? Why don't
fire with stick. It doesn't take that much to actually cook stuff.
Why doesn't France set up a factory there and employ the Africans to bake their own bread so they can buy it? Wouldn't that be capitalism on the march?
Do you think about the amount of money? And I hate to keep, like, we're seizing on Africa over and over again, but that does seem to be sort of this is simply a truism, the go-to...
Sorry, we're not shipping food to Greenland.
Iceland. People in Reykjavik need your help. That does seem to be the go-to continent for these charities and so forth. You know, the entire population
of
the United...
Well, for people who care.
The entire population of the United States could fit inside Montana. That is true. The entire population of this country could fit inside Montana. The point is, there's lots of space in this country. Think about all the money we have spent over the years. First of all, you think about the actual amount of dollars we have raised to send to, in this case, Africa. Think about all the money we have spent advertising those charities, all the money we have spent sending planes over, all the money we have spent transporting food, all the money we spend on soldiers guarding the food when it gets there, which it never does.
I remember after that We Are the World thing, some like Geraldo or something had found a warehouse where the food had just, it was just like rotting, just like covered in maggots. You know, with that money, seriously, we could go get everybody and just stick them on a series of buses and bring them here, and then they just live in Utah. You know what I mean? Everybody in Utah eats. I mean, to an admittedly extreme extent, everybody in Utah eats to excess.
And plus, they'd like the desert there.
There are welcoming people in Utah too. All right.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
I'm sorry, that just completely derailed.
Or give them internet access. Pop up, just pop up here and said free dinner for two at Chili's. Now, if we at least get people dial up there, they can print out these coupons. Well, they need a printer too. Then we can avoid this whole thing.
Then the TGI Fridays. Well, you know, just one good claim jumper there. Mm-hmm. I mean, all right. Claim jumper.
I barely knew her.
I'm sorry, what, Sarah?
Break.
We're solving problems left and right.
I know. It's very thrilling.
We'll find solutions together.
I don't... Working together. This is how we're going to win that NAB, that Crystal Award. For outstanding public service. The nominees are The Rick Emerson Show.
You know, there's someone who works here who actually does real news who tears their hair out trying to find things like this.
Who? Who does real news here?
There's some news lady who works down the hallway.
Lacey?
Yeah.
Oh, the public affairs director.
Uh-huh.
We should tell her we've got the answer to world hunger, that we've solved it. The answer is claim jumper. All right. I mean, one of those great wall of chocolate things from P.F. Chang's, that's like a whole village. They eat today and all week.
And that's a whole village to your waistline.
All right. Thank you for starting the music, because we were never going to shut up. We're just going to, you know, it's Thursday, and so we're going to do this. We're going to break. We'll come back. We will continue with the news, because Tim just flinched.
No, I enjoy doing
the news. Do you not enjoy the news?
Here's another free dinner for two at Chili's. Why can't we drop these coupons from an airplane over Africa?
Along with a TriMet ticket.
Here you go. Appreciate that more than a big bag full of barley?
Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Stay there. If I draw the distinction, it might make you more uncomfortable. If I say that it is a two-syllable word starting with S and ending with Y, and that word is sexy. So you feel better?
Fine.
It's a fine photograph. I think it's just that you look so intense. That's the thing. It's not a bad photograph. It's just you look like you're about to kick the ass of whoever's taking the photograph. Which is kind of hot in a way.
That's Pasha.
It is not. I'm just saying, you do. Here's also this. And then we'll talk to Steve Kastenbaum. Then we'll talk more to Tim Riley. Then we'll get to these calls about how to solve world hunger. Hunger. Here's, look at this photograph. You have Sarah Dillon on the back of the Mercury. Now picture this. Wait, hold on. All right. Picture this, and then with like a thick German accent, which I can't really do, but a whole lot of like, Mr. Bond, would you like to see how I extract information? Totally, that's like Ilsa, she-devil of the SS. That's totally what that is right there. You're totally, you know what I mean? I just feel dumb. I apologize if I made you feel uncomfortable.
No, it's okay.
I did not. It's a great photograph, it really is, but I mean, it is, and again, and this is the last thing I'll say about it, because I don't want you to be like any of your friends are telling you that I'm being a jerk or an ass or whatever. I'm really not, but I'm saying, how do I put this? It's like, it's not like you wear, the bar is set very low for you to look as though you are being very revealing. It's not like you wear a burqa, but you don't typically, people may, for all the fun we poke about, Sarah Dillon is edgy. It's like you don't really ever show any skin. It's like you're basically wrapped in a veil all day. You're like my my idiot nutcase Christian nieces who have to, like, swim with a full-length, like an ankle-length dress on. You're kind of like that most of the day. I mean, is it really, I don't think I've ever seen you. The closest I could ever say, the closest thing I've ever seen you in that would qualify as almost being low cut is, like, I saw you in a wife beater one time. That's about it. And even that
that's
had, like, a
summer wardrobe.
And that had, like, something else underneath. It was like a sports bra underneath it. So it was like, there's still really nothing showing. So you don't ever really show skin as such. So here, I mean, it sounds like a dumb joke, but it's like your shoulders are exposed. And so suddenly you just look all trashy.
I know. I totally feel funny.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not. So I'm just poking. I don't want you to. I honestly don't want you to feel uncomfortable because it's a beautiful photograph, but you never show any skin. And so now you are showing your shoulders and, like, the tiniest bit of your upper chest. Like, there's no. I mean, I hate to. There's no cleavage. There's no anything. I mean, you can't see anything at all. I mean, I see chicks on the max that are showing, like, three times as much as this. You know what I mean? So only you could take, like, a topless photo and still be showing nothing and show less skin than you show, like, than most people do daily. So it's a perfectly fine photograph. But it is sort of...
Don't feel bad, Rick.
I don't want your friends to think I'm a jerk, and I know you're getting a lot of those, you know, that man isn't treating you right, emails from your friends.
No, everyone's enjoying poking fun at me. It's fine. I'm the one who chose to do it, so...
It's a very nice photograph, but you do look a little intense in it. You do look, it is sort of aggressive looking. That's all I'm saying. And that has to do with the brightness of the lipstick, as dumb as that sounds, and the fact that you do have a sort of like I'll kill you look on your face. So we'll get these calls here in a second and more from Tim Riley. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from New York. Ow. CNN radio correspondent and man of the world, Steve Kastenbaum. Hello, sir. How are you today?
I'm great. I'd be even better if I could see the photograph.
See, that's creepy, Sarah. See, I'm not creepy. Steve is creepy.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Sarah is on the back of one of our alternative newspapers here, a magazine called the Portland Mercury. She's on the back for a local haircuttery. And it's a great photograph, but again, a little more, I would say a little more... A little more sexual than she looks on a daily basis. That's all I would say. Relatively tame by the world's standards, but by Sarah's standards, it's a little edgy. So that's all I'm just saying. Hey, let's return to the land of the fully clothed and covered and talk about Rosie O'Donnell for a second. So you were you there when she announced that I'm leaving The View. I mean, were you in the audience?
No, I wasn't in the audience. I was outside the studio, and we spoke to people who were in the audience. And, of course, we have the audio clips of her farewell announcement, if you'd like to hear.
Let's not. Unless you have something that we probably haven't heard, because the one we've heard over and over the last day is the where she preemptively sort of hushes the audience. I think because she's afraid that no one's gonna sound sad, because she says, "So I'm leaving The View, but it's not sad. I'll be back." And she sort of, like, preemptively covers the audience. She hushes them because I think she was really terrified that no one was gonna make any sort of sympathy noises. So
she didn't give them a chance to react.
That's
right.
What I'm saying, because she was afraid there would be no reaction. So. So you talked to, what was the audience's thoughts on this?
The majority of people who walked out of that studio said they were sorry to see her go. For differing reasons, though. Some, while they don't agree with a lot of the things she says, they said that she makes the show interesting.
Well, that is true.
It was controversial, that she brought controversy to a show that was otherwise boring because everybody was always in agreement. So they like that aspect. Some people did agree with Rosie, and they wish they could hear more of that on TV, that they were saying everything is so dull and dumbed down on television that it's refreshing to hear somebody with an alternative viewpoint. And then there were a few people who said that they're not sad to see her go at all because of her outspokenness and the airing of her personal dirty laundry on some occasions, the promotion of 9/11 conspiracy theories. Definitely got her a lot of negative press.
I will say this. Here's the one thing I'll say about Rosie. Actually, it's so weird. This program, and whoever would have thought that we would spend so much time talking about Rosie O'Donnell on this show, and clearly spending time thinking about her inside my own head, because we do have so many differing and conflicting thoughts about Rosie O'Donnell. On the one hand, she is a great businesswoman.
Mm-hmm.
She has been very successful, almost everything she's ever done. She has a great head for business. She's very shrewd in many ways. She knows how to get attention. She does have a certain presence, one might say, a certain, I don't know if charisma is the right word, but I mean, she, you know, there's some people on a TV show that they just fade into the woodwork. I can't even think of who that fourth woman is. Barbara Walters, Rosie O'Donnell, Joy Behar, and who's the other woman?
The token young woman.
See,
right?
But I don't even know her name.
I'd join you in that one.
See, and so that woman, whoever she is, and please don't call, no one email me, I don't care. She just fades into the woodwork because she doesn't have any, she does not have what Billy Graham would call gazinkas. There's just no vibe, no presence to her. Rosie O'Donnell does have that. Almost every bit of publicity that show has gotten in the last year has been because of Rosie O'Donnell.
Right. And, you know, I think the problem there is that she sort of dominated the other personalities on that show. And at least that's what I've been hearing from television critics, and they think that that this was all a ruse, that ABC just didn't want her back, that, you know, because she upset the mix on the show.
Did they not want her back, or did they not want her back for her price?
Well, she's saying that they wanted her to sign a 3-year contract, and she only wanted to sign a 1-year contract. But, you know, I mean, as negotiations go, you know how it is. If they want you, they'll make it acceptable to you,
right.
You know?
Was this ABC or was it Barbara Walters?
Well, Barbara Walters was saying she had absolutely nothing to do with this, that it was all ABC daytime execs. But as we all know, you know, that's Barbara Walters' show.
Sure.
You know, so you got to think that they at least consulted with her.
The one thing I will say the fifth thing I will say about Rosie O'Donnell is this, and you nailed it when you were talking about her 9/11 conspiracy, you know, and she's clearly in just a nutcase on that. I mean, but it is interesting. And I never really thought about it until you put it in those terms where you said that, you know, that she was unpredictable and you never knew what she was going to say. It does sort of highlight how predictable and boring the rest of the media really is. I was just thinking about that while you were talking. Is that I think in America we have grown so used to, I think in America we, as our default expectation now, we automatically just assume that no one on television will really ever say what they're truly thinking. We assume that no one on television will say something that hasn't been staged and focus grouped and market tested. We assume that, you know, we're so unused to hearing anybody's real thoughts or emotions or angers or outbursts or whatever, which I think is why talk radio appeals to so many people, because you do get kind of an unfiltered view of how people think sometimes. And I think on television, you're so used to getting this polished, buffed out, glossed, completely denuded version of personality that when you hear Rosie O'Donnell there saying, I think 9/11 was an inside job, it kind of jolts you a little bit because you're not used to hearing people say what they really think on American television.
At least on terrestrial TV, right. Yeah, yeah. When you get the cable, that's where you find people saying things like that more often.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know that if she doesn't already, you know, by the end of the day, she'll have some show on satellite radio probably, so.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. If I can just interject, our own Michael Ware here at CNN, who's our correspondent in Iraq,
uh-huh.
Back here in New York, we're just talking to him before about this because he's coming under fire. A lot of people are criticizing him, saying that, you know, he's making it personal, you know, that he's interjecting his own opinions into some of his coverage by the descriptions he's giving of what life is like in Baghdad, in Iraq, and talking about McCain's visit to Iraq.
By people, you mean conservatives?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm also looking at some people who review television and the news media for a living, and the question is, you know, Does this reporter have an agenda because of the way he's presenting the news? And when you talk to him, he says, you know, he's just telling you what he's seeing on the ground, and it's not a pretty picture. And sometimes, you know, you can't present a balanced picture when everything you're seeing appears to be on one side.
Well, yeah. And I got to say, I believe that everybody has an agenda, whether you're a liberal, whether you're a conservative. I mean, everybody goes in the ballot box, or at least everybody has at least a political leaning, whether they act on it or not.
Right.
So I would rather that everything be upfront. If you're going to have bias, if you're going to have some sort of an agenda one way or the other, at least be honest about it. And Hunter Thompson once said that, you know, sometimes there is only one side to the coin. So
it's true. I mean, sometimes there is very much a right side of the issue, and you know, there's no point in presenting, you know, the other side equally when they're so wrong.
That's,
you know,
exactly. You and I are on the same, but we are simpatico, my friend.
That's great.
All right, Steve Kastenbaum in New York City. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will have a Stromboli for me, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
I definitely will. Bye, Sarah.
I'm sorry. We didn't get the less lecherous comment from Steve. All right, Steve Kastenbaum, ladies and gentlemen. I think it was a bi Sarah, you look hot.
Oh.
All right, it's 503.
See, even though he can't see me.
See, today you look fine, but it's a very modest outfit that you are wearing today.
It's my bike riding outfit.
Not at all. I'm saying it's
you might not know what those look like anymore, Rick Emerson.
You shut your hole, huh? Why don't you look at that? All right. That didn't make any sense. 503-733-2970. Rick, take a deep breath about this whole starving people thing. People that are starving and not used to food can't really just eat a Big Mac and be done with it. I'm not sure they can digest normal food, so they have to stick with staples like grains. And then he signs it. You can't just go handing out jalapeno poppers and manwiches and not kill everybody. The manwich. Where would this country be without the manwich? All right. 503-733-2970. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take 1 second here. Hold on. Fantastic. We're going to read this email. I'm going to give you one of my patented brilliant ideas for you to use because I just don't have enough time. And then we'll probably break and we'll come back with Tim Riley and then the top five gym rope, et cetera. Rick, this email says, this is what just happened during your call with Steve Kastenbaum. He was talking about something and you responded with, Steve, I was just thinking about that as you were talking. The media is boring and bland. So, Rick, basically you told him he was boring and bland and that you think about other things while he's talking to you. Well done, Rick Emerson. Well done. That's what I do, sir.
Smooth.
That's exactly what he said. He signed it with smooth. It's part of my charm. All right. Let's see. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Let's see. What the hell else we do? Oh, I got one more comment about the Sarah thing. Let's see about this photo on the back of the Mercury, which is going to be available probably all week. So go pick it up at the wherever it is you pick it up.
You pick it up on the street.
Yeah,
there are little machines everywhere.
On the street where kids pick
sometimes
up
sometimes on the corner
where kids pick up everything these days. They don't get it here. They'll get it on the street, Sarah. Rick, Sarah's picture looks like. This is totally true. This is, and you, Sarah, this is not offensive. This is not bad in any way. And
oh,
once
I'm
I
not
say
offended.
This, no, this ends the discussion. This ends the discussion. This guy, Sean, this ends the discussion about what you look like in this hot photo on the back of the Mercury. I have now the definitive answer. It's so true. Once you hear it, your mind will snap shut for any other. You will no longer accept any input about what Sarah looks like. Rick, Sarah's picture looks like Natasha from Rocky and Bullwinkle come to life. Absolutely true. That is absolutely 100% true. I would absolutely say that. You can totally picture like the hot Russian accent coming out of this face, too. You can talk this face. I say suddenly sounding like a serial killer. You can totally picture it talking with a Russian accent, can't you? I think it's cute. I'm going to go get its phone number. All right, it's 503-733-2970.
Does she have a unibrow?
Who? You?
No.
What are we talking about now? I don't even know. You've lost me in the third person thing.
I was looking at Natasha.
I don't even really remember what she looks like, except that she's sort of as hot as a cartoon character could be. All right.
And evil-looking.
Yeah, we should probably break. Oh, except for this idea. I'm going to give you this idea, then we'll break. We'll come back. Tim Riley, Jim Roop, etc. Oh, well, we still got to talk about the Portland Anthem today. What the hell? What the hell else do we have to do? We have to know the Scotty. All this stuff. Here's a brilliant idea that I don't have time to execute. So somebody out there should do this. You know that Alec Baldwin call that we've been playing that's going around the internet? The whole, you are a thoughtless little pig. I can't do the telephone thing. Here's what somebody needs to do. Somebody needs to take the call that Alec Baldwin made to his thoughtless little pig of a daughter and his ranting speech from Glengarry Glen Ross. Mash them together. You know what I'm saying? Like that speech in Glengarry Glen Ross where he, you know, so either...
What, the Always Be Closing one?
Exactly, yeah, where he's like, you know, you can't close S, you are S, hit the bricks, pal, because you are going out. I've been in this business 15 years. The materials you got, I can go out tonight, make myself $15,000. Can you? Can you?
It's just kind of sad.
That I can do the whole thing? And your question, pal, why am I here? I'm here as a favor to Mitch and Murray. I told them the real favor, take my advice and fire your effing ass, because a loser is a loser. All right, so there you go. You take that, you blend it together with the, you are a thoughtless little pig.
I can tell you're working on it right now.
It's genius. I'm seriously, it's like the best idea I've ever had in the last 5 minutes. That the you thoughtless little pig and the Always Be Closing mixed together. What's your name? F you! That's my name! All right. Take a little break here. What, you give me that look sometimes like you're studying an insect through thick glass.
I don't really. Strange little man sometimes.
I'm just saying. Some guys know sports scores. AIDA! Attention, interest, decision, action. Do I have your attention? I know I do, because it's F or walk. You close or you hit the bricks. Back after this. Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Dallas State Radio. Rick, this watch is worth more than your car, you thoughtless little pig. It's fantastic. What a great idea that is. That's like the other day when we gave somebody the that Spinal Tap joke that they could make. We just don't have enough time to use all the material that we have here. Rick is Ovens for Africans going to be your big winter promotion? Probably not, sir. Rick, I can see the logo in my mind, an oven flying through the air with a parachute. Man, that's funny. That logo, that logo
with the wings of a dove.
Just an oven with wings falling out of the sky. and then just a starving man waiting to catch the oven. All right.
With a rainbow around the stove.
It's true. And a puppy. And a kitten playing with a ball of yarn. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Let's see here. What are we, what the hell am I doing? Rick, one thing I've noticed about you over the years is that you believe you, Rick, one thing I've noticed about you over the years is that you believe you,
How you doing?
This guy, okay, this is just badly written. One thing I will read this the way it's... never mind, screw this. This is a funny email, but I'm not going to read it because the opening sentence makes no sense. What it basically... Rick, one thing I've noticed about you over the years is that you believe you can change something and make it the opposite just by saying it. Like, just now, you said, quote, I know everyone's saying I'm being a jerk about this, but I'm not. It's just that you look like a whore, Sarah, or a slut. I can't figure it out, but I'm not being a jerk. You think that by just using the phrase, I'm not a jerk, it somehow magically makes that the case.
This person is dead on.
Yes, he says, by the way, stop making Sarah feel silly and just post a picture on your website so we can all see it. I can't imagine she's anything less than stunning. Aw. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
I barely knew her.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, we begin this report with a little tragedy.
Uh-oh, do we have a snuff watch?
Flags will be flying at half-staff.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's cue your snuff watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
never do the Monster Mash again, except at the Pearly Gates. Aubrey Boris Pickett, whose dead-on impersonation propelled the Halloween anthem to the top of the charts in 1962, making him one of pop music's most endearing one-hit wonders, has died.
Now it's just a dead impression.
He was dubbed the Guy Lombardo of Halloween, by whom we don't know. This is the first time I've heard this. He has died at the West Los Angeles Veterans Hospital, says his longtime editor, Stephen Hirsch.
Now, is that a place that you go when you have money?
I would imagine so, yes.
I mean, because what is that hospital? What was that place you were saying you die at in Hollywood if you're broke?
I think this is it.
Yeah, well, there was somebody who died a while back, and you're like,
you can go to General Hospital if you don't have any insurance money.
there was some celebrity who died a few months ago, and it was a place that sounded exotic. It was like the actor's, you know, hospital or something, and you're like, he died broke.
It was like Culver City General Hospital or something like that.
Yeah, I wonder if Bobby Pickett, who I will always refer to as Bobby Boris Pickett, because that's how he was.
That's his middle name.
Because that's how he was always. Because I had, or rather, my dad had the full 33 1/3. He had the full LP of the Monster Mash. Probably not worth anything, but it is amazing. You want to talk about a guy? That's Yankee ingenuity. He cranked out one really bad song, which was a hit, and then he created 9 more songs. He had a record's worth of original bad Halloween songs,
including Monster's Holiday.
I know that one. I can sing, you know, I'm like Don Geronimo. I can sing all of these. It was a monster's holiday. They were up to no good. It was a monster's holiday. I know all of those songs. What's another one?
Graduation Day.
Oh, I don't know that.
That was number 80 in June of 1963.
Really?
You have to ask Dick Clark about that.
That's in the bottom 40.
That must have been. And let's see. Well, the Monster Mash hit the Billboard chart 3 times when it debuted in 1962. And again in August 1970, and the third time in 1973. After that, he gave up.
That's it. Well, but I mean, he's probably the only person to ever do that, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's probably the only musician, the only performer to put a song in the top, in the top 40 3 different times. I don't think anybody's ever done that.
Nope.
I think the only other songs that I can think of that ever hit the top 40 more than once, I think Bohemian Rhapsody hit the top 40 more than once. Once when it came out, and then once after Wayne's World. And I'm pretty sure that Twist and Shout hit the top 40 twice. I don't think there's any other song that ever hit the top 40 multiple, and certainly not 3 times. I think that's a record that'll never be beaten ever, especially now. Well, with the stratification of the record industry and so forth. I wonder if he made money on that. I wonder if he must have. If nothing else, he must have been doing live. I mean, I remember as a gag.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of checking his website about a year and a half ago, and it was like, Bobby Boris Pickett is available to play your Halloween party.
He continued performing through his final gig in November. He remained in the band for Halloween performances, including a memorable 1993 show when his bus broke down outside of Frankenstein, Missouri.
I'm sure that wasn't at all fabricated for press purposes.
No.
So there you go. I mean, you know, and let me just say, we're not going to play the Monster Mash because I never, ever, ever want to hear that song again.
But this time it really is a graveyard smash.
That's right. We can be first on the scene with all the bad puns. Graveyard smash. That's it. I guess that's it. That's probably the best. I don't think that can be topped.
No.
So there you go. So we're not going to play the Monster Mash because you'll get to hear it 5 billion times over the next 24 hours.
As soon as people get the automation set up right,
they'll be, as soon as the Clear Channel memo comes, please to be playing 8 seconds of the Monster Mash, followed by a 3-second back sell.
Then I give your name.
Then a 40-minute stop set. All right. It's fantastic. There's your snuff watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Show. By the way, on the Bishop's Barbershop's website, there's a different photo of you, Sarah. There's a different version of the ad on the Bishop's Barbershop
really?
Site.
Is
yeah.
Puppy Dog still there?
It is, and Swarmer Muppet sticking his tongue out.
Oh, I love that picture.
Yeah.
Rather irreverent.
Yeah, you look just as evil, but Muppet looks sort of whimsical. And you can really see his mohawk. It brings the mohawk into stark relief.
Oh, he looks cute. Yeah.
Probably toward the end of the session.
Yeah, he was exhausted. He was exhausted and malnourished. Don't give the dog any water just yet. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Oh, what's wrong with people? Now, Portland police are searching for people stealing parts of parked cars. The thieves are stealing catalytic converters and selling them at a local scrapyard so they can, well, continue with their methamphetamine dealings. One car owner described his catalytic converter was gone when he turned the key last night. I looked underneath the car and saw everything was missing. Surveillance video shows the thieves stole the converter from a parked car on Marine Drive in a matter of minutes. And this is when people were walking around in the parking lot in broad daylight watching the guy. By the way, if you're a methamphetamine addict, you can get $160 for stealing a catalytic converter, but your people already told you that.
Hey, Scotty, by the way, I can't, is this Jim Roop? Well, I'm asking you, I can't, there's nothing on the screen. I'm assuming this is Jim Roop, because on the hotline.
He's probably mourning the death of Bobby Boris Pickett.
Yeah, aren't we all? Let's, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Rick Emerson Show from Los Angeles. CNN Radio correspondent for the Stars, James Roop. Hello, sir.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey, Bobby Boris Pickett, author of The Monster Mash, is dead.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Just died, 69 years of age.
Oh, geez, that breaks my heart.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, Tim Riley has dubbed this the final, he said that now this is really, quote, a graveyard smash. You can feel free to use that joke if you'd like.
There you go. Thank you very much. I'll use that as soon as I get back in the courtroom.
I made the lesser joke that his dead-on impersonation is now just a dead impersonation. That's not as funny, but you can use that one if you need, like, a backup joke. Hey, I know you're busy. We'll be real quick here. A, when did Phil Spector start looking like a drag queen impersonating a 1960s version of Betty Friedan?
You know, he's looking very odd, and he's real tentative. I mean, when the jury just came in this last session, when this session began, he was staring at me as if he knew who I was. And I look at him, I kind of raise my eyebrows, like, what do you want? And I think he was looking right through me. The guy, he's either on some kind of medication or he is just getting wackier by the minute.
Oh, like it's not possible that both are happening? I mean, come on. Is it unnerving to have Phil Spector stare at you knowing that he probably shot somebody?
No, it's really sad, man. It's sad to look at him and realize who he was and where he is now. You know, it's a real sad thing because, yeah, say what you will about the Wall of Sound or whatever, he really did advance rock and roll to a certain degree.
It's true.
And he is legendary in what he did. And I don't care what Paul McCartney says, Long and Winding Road sounds pretty good.
Yeah, no, and you think about so many records, even for people who don't really know Phil Spector and what he recorded, there's so many songs after Phil Spector that wouldn't exist or sound the way they do without him. I mean, anybody who's a Bruce Springsteen fan has Phil Spector to thank for that sound, especially in, like, Born to Run. And, of course, the latter-day Ramones records. Jim Steinman and Todd Rundgren, who created Bat Out of Hell for Meatloaf, Bat Out of Hell sounds like a Phil Spector recording.
Yeah.
I mean, that entire album sounds like it was produced by Phil Spector. That guy really did change a whole lot about rock and roll, but boy, goddamn, he just looks weird, though.
Yeah, he really, I mean, he's always been odd.
Yeah.
But he looks weirder now. And it's been 4 years, but he looks more strange now than he did, you know, 4 years ago when all this began. And it's killing him, I think. It really is.
And I thought that weird Louis the 14th hair that he had going on was like the weirdest he could possibly look. But he's proven me wrong.
You know, he's got the big Nehru kind of jacket thing going for him today, a big long jacket and not really a Nehru collar, but a big long jacket. And he's got his platform shoes on, that page boy wig. I mean, his wife's hot. But, man, for the rest of them, he's just, it's just amazing. And he's got that sort of Parkinson's shape going on.
Well, the good news for you is that his wife may be single and or just available with lots of free time in the near future. So, you know, just so you know. Hey, real quickly, is it true? Somebody told us you're going to be on Nancy Grace tonight, so to speak.
I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, they hinted at the fact that it may happen. I guess no TV people are here, so they're going to use whatever they can. They're really scraping the bottom of the maggot barrel for me.
Now, Jim.
Are you going to wear your Ray-Bans, Jim Roop?
I don't think she'd appreciate that.
You know, who cares what Nancy Grace would appreciate? She's an unlikable woman. Do you know what... I guess I'll just... I'm at the TiVo.com site here, because I can remote program my TiVo. I'm just going to tape all the Nancy Grace showings tonight.
What time does it even come on, do we know?
It says here, 8 o'clock p.m. and...
Same time?
Both 3 and 8. I guess 3 p.m. and then there is a revised version at 8 p.m.
I think I'm supposed to be on at 5:20, which would be 8:20, I guess.
Okay, yeah, I guess this is showing me the Eastern time or something. Okay, so I'm going to tape this. I'm at TiVo.com right now. I am taping this setting this to tape as we speak. Listings are for East Coast. Okay, so I'm totally setting tonight's 5 o'clock Nancy Grace. to be taped so that we may see your visage, Jim Roop, gracing our television screens.
Well, don't expect anything. It's just I'm just going to answer questions and see what happens.
No, it's going to be gold, my friend. Don't diminish yourself. You're going to be the best thing about that. Because really, what else is you? I mean, you're going to be, because otherwise you're just going to be her just sitting there shrieking with that voice that could shatter glass. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, and there's nothing really to say. I mean, the opening statements are still going on, and
yep.
each side's laying out their game plan. I mean, come on, it's not arguments. It's their story. Each of them has a story, so there's nothing really to say.
I programmed it now. Fantastic. It's set. All right, we look forward to it, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Did you get that email I sent you about the blog that I wrote?
I did. Thank you so much. You wrote a great posting on the internal CNN blog about your experience here at the listener party,
wow.
which was great, which was fantastic. And so we thank you for that. You said some very nice things about our program. You made us sound way more popular and respectable than we really are. So
the way I saw it, sir.
If you want to go to 970.am, by the way, the next time you get a chance, the gallery of videos and photos from Lister Party is up. You look fantastic and fantastically drunk in many of them. So you do look as though you were having the time of your life. It really was. well, it shows, my friend. I think there's one where you have a gin and tonic in one hand, a beer bottle in the other, and you're attempting to cradle the microphone under your chin. And it's not really working out, but boy, do you look like you're having a fantastic night.
I do well at multitasking in some respects.
Yes, it's true. So, you can go to my website or you can just go to the station site. That's right there. I think Tyler has that address to you. So I want to ask him about that.
Very good.
All right, sir. Enjoy the rest of your Southern California afternoon. We will talk to you soon. Jim Roop, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you,
sir. There's Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. All right. 503-733-2970. Here's what we got to do still. We have to get to this business of the Portland anthem today. We send out the press release. We got to start coming up with the first line to the song. What else do I got to take another pass at this worst story in the history of the world, because we spent all day yesterday on a story that we couldn't read. It was so awful, and that has now just been sort of been enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Did you put that on your website?
I did. If you, for whatever reason, and by the way, spare me the emails about why did you post this, Rick? I read it, and now I can't. I got one email from a guy who, how do I put this? Who found it difficult to engage in loving relations later in the evening because he had read the worst story in the history of the world, which we posted at rickemerson.com, which is also up on the MySpace page. It's myspace.com/rickemerson, so you can comment on it as well. But I got an email from a guy who was like, I was all ready for a romantic evening with my wife. That didn't happen. Thanks so much. Dude, there's like 15 warnings on it. It says, there's like four or five sentences in a row where I say variations of the phrase, don't read this. It's not good for your soul and other things. And if you read it anyway, you are hoist by your own petard. That is not my fault. So that's there. So we got to do today's installment of our search for the worst story ever. We got to talk about the Portland Anthem. I got to try to get this top five done. Because we got today's top five, because tomorrow I want to do top five anthems of all time in honor of our creation of this Portland anthem. All of that, plus another visit from Tim Riley. It's just too much. Anyway, oh wait, we should break here. If for no other reason than I got to drink some of this Aviso. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We're back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. You stay right there. Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-7. I don't even know what I'm saying. 503-733-2970. Rick, I had to hang up. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry I had to hang up, but my dog started to bark at the UPS guy who was delivering my May supply of Hot Pockets.
Says
Pamela. She says, actually, I researched the American Idol donation thing because I get totally honked off. And how much assistance dough goes overseas when places like Louisiana are still made of sticks and stones. With the Idol donation thing, one gets to choose where geographically one's money goes. For instance, Louisiana. I confess to having donated money specifying the Gulf Coast or well spreading the word daily payment. Well, that's fine. Doesn't matter to me. I'm just saying, I don't care where money goes. It's not that I'm in denial that there are problems elsewhere in the world. I'm just saying, I do. And you'll know, by the way, let me just make this observation. You will note, I'm being that drunk guy at a bar because I'm waving my bottle of Vizo to, like, make the point. Let me tell you. And I'm
Careful. I can see that thing flying out of your hands. Is that?
It's not open.
Okay.
I'm punctuating every word by waving the bottle of Vizo as though it was a laser pointer or like a baton at the Boston Pops performance. Let me tell you a few things about a few things. You will note, incidentally, on this program, we don't ever use the phrase or complain about so-called political correctness. When people complain about political correctness, that's always just white people complain that they can't slur.
Totally like my soapbox derby idea where I thought we should all dress as bums and make a big giant shopping cart.
Right. That's hilarious.
I think it's hilarious, and every single person I told said that it wasn't politically correct.
I mean, that's just... And
fill it with cans? I think it's funny.
See, no one... That's what I'm saying. So, anyway, my point is... What is my point? Oh, so I don't ever come on and complain about, the problem, I just don't like this political correctness. Because it's just typically just someone who wants to be an ass and is upset that... Is upset that they're not allowed to use some horrific word with impunity. Anyway, I will say this, though. I think that you would probably hear a lot of screeching from certain quarters in America if you did something like this, but I really do honestly believe that there ought to be, and Tim and I were just talking about this during the break, there ought to be some organization or some group, some charity, some whatever, whose sole purpose is to gather, collect, funnel, and then distribute money to Americans. And I'm not just talking about just the poorest of the poor. I'm talking about, like, the working poor, like actual working Americans who cannot afford health care, who have no health care, are not insured, or workers who are perma-temps. Those people who are part-timers, but they're working, like, 190 hours in a pay period, but the company won't give them benefits or whatever. There's all kinds of, and I don't need to be ranting about this. But, there's 40 million of those people in this country, people who ought to have health care and do not. So there really ought to be some group that spearheads charity drives for that group of people. And then I would love to see some show like American Idol raise money for that group. And you just know that people would screech about it for no because Americans, for some reason, love to get angry about things that are actually in their own best interest. I will never understand. There's this great book called What the Hell Is Wrong with Kansas, or What's Wrong with Kansas, or What's the Matter with Kansas. And it's a whole book about why Americans are constantly voting against their own best interest. I've just exhausted myself on this. I just don't care that much. I'm going to quit now and do something else. I'm going to reset while I have some Vizo. Is somebody texting you about me?
No, it was my friend who had made fun of me about my bums in the shopping cart idea. And
really?
Because I thought it would be funny to call it bumming around, and so he started me bumming around.
Homeless people are funny.
I think that they'd appreciate it. I do my part to help the homeless. I think a giant shopping cart soapbox is hilarious.
It is. It is. It is hilarious. There is comedic value. Look, let me just tell you this. And I'm not saying the problem of homelessness is funny. And as George Carlin once said, it's not really homelessness because a home is an abstract, ethereal concept. It really is houselessness, if we really wanted to be, like, linguistically correct about this. I'm not saying the problem of homelessness is funny, but I'm saying you picture a hobo, blacked out teeth, and a bindle on a stick. That's funny. There is humor in such things. What was I saying? Blah, blah, blah,
I don't know,
blah, blah.
You kind of worked up.
Soapbox derby, homeless people. It's a funny idea. Anybody doesn't like that, they can just say.
Yeah, and the name, bumming around, I thought it was brilliant.
They should get stuffed, is what they should do.
Oh, no, that's my team.
Who?
No, all my teammates.
They're not my team. I don't care. They can get stuffed. They can get bent, is what they can get.
Even
Kiki. Why do you have to do that? None. Everybody except for Kiki. Who else on the team? Anybody?
Lisa and Rhaenyra.
Yeah, Lisa's boyfriend could kick my ass, though, so I'm not going to say anything about that.
It's a little scary.
Yeah, and Rhaenyra, she's hot, too. I think I could take her boyfriend, though. He's a little pudgy. I think I could take him.
He's not pudgy.
He is. He's spongy.
He's a little, I think he would acknowledge, he's the guy, let me just tell you this, and then I know that we're just sitting here sounding like it's a coffee clash because we're just sitting here talking about your friends. Rhaenyra's boyfriend, Sarah's got this friend named Rhaenyra.
Oh, it's her husband.
Her husband, what's his name?
Corey.
Corey has a bit of a gut, which I think he would acknowledge. Look, it's not like I'm some Charles Atlas or whatever. I'm all flabby over here. He has this gut. He was doing the greatest thing. He was talking about getting a tattoo because there was this revelation.
That is brilliant.
There was this revelation, by the way, that you can get glow-in-the-dark tattoos, which I didn't know. They're not visible during the day. They're phosphorescent tattoos, which sounds like they've got to give you cancer at some point, but it might be worth it. You can apparently get tattoos that you can't see until the lights go out.
Yep, and Corey has it right across his knuckle.
And what does it say?
Knuckle.
And you can't see them during the day?
You'll go to the mall and all of a sudden you see knuckles.
Lights go out, bam, look at my glow-in-the-dark tattoos. I want to get a clown face tattooed on my real face. Just so I look normal, if the lights go out, bam, suddenly it's a clown. How great would that be?
Okay, we have to do that.
It's the best.
Would you really do it?
No.
Or even like a glow-in-the-dark, just a mustache? I will pay for you to get a glow-in-the-dark mustache if you do it.
That's the, and the great thing is you can't see it during the day, but the lights go out, I've got a mustache. It's fantastic.
Oh, come on.
It's a great idea. Anywho, he was talking about, he has a gut, and he was talking about just getting six-pack abs tattooed, like just a shadow.
Like shading?
Yeah, just having his gut, having his beer gut shaded and tattooed, so it looked like he had huge abs. Like, so big that they're actually, like 6 inches out from his stomach. All right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. What do we got to get done? Here's what we got to get done this hour before the end of today's program. It's almost Friday, and we're still so behind. Does it feel in a weird way like we're just starting the show? It's 10 minutes after 2, and it feels like we're just now getting down to brass tacks.
Today's just been kind of discombobulated.
Well, it's just because there's been so much news, and there's this picture of you on the back of the Mercury. We've had all these people we got to talk to and everything. Here's what we got to get done before the end of today's show. I want to talk to Scotty a little bit about something. So we'll talk to Scotty in just a second. I may or may not get to our search for the second worst story in the history of the world. I've got both of them right here. We may or may not get to those, though. I'm just going to put that, I'm going to make that the C of the ABC here. I'm going to make that the lowest of the priorities, getting to this. Because we spent so much time yesterday on that story that was horrific, like off the charts. We have another installment of the Ministry of Truth, and we have got to come up with the opening line for the Portland Anthem. So I think, how are we going to do this here? Because people are already posting suggestions on the MySpace page. If you go to Rick Emerson or to MySpace.com/Rick Emerson, people have posted a lot of suggestions there. Now, we've been playing this horrific song that I guess the City Fathers are weighing as the potential theme, song for Portland, Oregon.
And we must stop it.
Just going to play just a little bit of this here. This is the song that I guess Portland, Oregon is.
Travel across this nation. And I've been from town to town.
It's like a bad version of the Night Court theme.
So bad.
Place has got a story.
And Harry Anderson.
See what they've been putting down.
Richard Mall as Bull.
From the streets of New York City.
Marky Post as Christine.
To the hills of Hollywood.
And John Larroquette as Dan Fielding.
There is one place I return to.
Mountain in the hood.
Rose City, make my home in Portland. Rose City, that's the beat. Rose City, make my home in Portland. A city by any other name.
See, that just doesn't make any sense. That just doesn't even mean anything. And if you're not convinced that it's a terrible song.
Okay.
No, you gotta hear the saxophone solo. That seals it for you. This really cements his awfulness right here. Lay it on me. Oh, yeah.
Man,
makes my skin crawl. All
right, so here's the thing. So we have decided that, as they say, this cannot stand. So
no.
we're creating our own version. We're creating our own Portland anthem. We put out a whole press release about this yesterday. Susan Reynolds wrote it. We released it. So what we're going to do is we are going to, as they say, sort of daisy chain it, one line at a time, where the audience will come up with one line, and then each day, or, you know, so, we will come up with the line that follows. Kind of like, you know, and they've done this on the internet, where they'll write a novel online, and what they'll do is somebody will write a paragraph, and then they forward the email to somebody else who writes the second paragraph, third paragraph, fourth paragraph, and over the course of, you know, like 6 or 7 weeks, they will write an entire novel, one paragraph at a time online. So that's how we're going to do it, but we're going to do it on the air, one line at a time. And then we'll get the song recorded, and then we will, I don't know, and then we'll go and we'll demand that the city acknowledge its genius and greatness. So here's what we got to get done. By the end of today's program, I would like to have the opening, because it all comes down to the opening line and the chorus. And we'll get to the chorus at a later point. But every journey begins with a single step. Every saga has a beginning. Every song has an opening line. So we must now come up with the opening line for the Portland anthem. I'll read you some suggestions when we go on, but I'm going to give you the numbers. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. By the end of today's program, though, we got to try to come up with the opening line of the Portland anthem. So that's what that is, I'm not going to say it's job one, but it would be very nice if we could get that done. Because, you know, it's like Stephen King says, that just looking at the blank sheet of paper is just it's overwhelming and intimidating. So starting the song is going to be the hardest thing. Once we get the opening line, bam, everything else is inevitable. All the other lines come more easily. So we got to do that. So it's 503-733-2970. Now, having said that, I feel like we're screwing ourselves here, because having said that, I can now probably not do this hunt for the second worst story ever, because they're both sort of phone heavy. They're both kind of phone heavy topics.
Why, did you find another story that's pretty bad?
Oh, there's an endless supply. There's an endless supply of bad stories, but, you know, I'm just going to have to sort of put these in the hopper, as they say. I'll have to put these aside, and we'll just have to come back and do them at a later time. So we'll do real quickly here.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy.
And then we'll break here in a few minutes, and we'll come back to Tim Riley, etc.
You're not going to amount to that, Scott!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
Why, Scotty J, hello, sir.
Why, hello, everybody.
How are you?
It's just Rick talking to you.
It's really just me.
Oh, hello. Oh, I was saying hello.
Hi,
to Tim and Sarah.
Uh-huh.
And you too.
All right, so it is now Thursday. Now, we talked about this a little bit the other day. When is the last time you had a cigarette? Don't lie or we'll know.
Saturday morning around 9 was my last one.
Look me directly in the eye.
That's true.
Okay, hold on. Don't break eye contact. Okay. When is the last time you had a cigarette?
Saturday morning around 9. And the thing is, it has been, that's all I think about every day. It's like, oh, I want a cigarette.
Really? Is that true?
Oh, I want a beer.
Now, see, I'm not.
It's true.
Funny how one just immediately bled into the other there. Oh, I want some horse. Oh, boy. Okay, so. Is this the what is the longest you've ever gone without a cigarette?
In my life, I've gone like a year before.
All right. So you have gone, and I'm not trying to knock it.
I've never smoked.
So, and I will actually go so far as to say that I've never tried smoking. That's how much of a loser I am. That's how much of a
joyless. You're not a loser.
I wouldn't say
for
loser for that.
How much of a joyless
prude.
It has been
living
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So it's been 5 days.
Yeah, but it's actually been like close to 7, because
now when does it really start to get bad? Is it worse in? I know that it never goes away, but is it worse the first couple of days, or is it worse like after a month?
It's worse the first couple of days. After day number 4 of bearing through it, it's usually downhill from there.
Now, do you feel how confident on the classic 1 to 10 scale do you feel in your ability to stay smoke free? Let me ask you this. On a scale of 1 to 10, seriously now.
It's all about willpower.
I understand.
Which I have.
Giving 110%. Playing the game you know you can play. I'm just saying, on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that a month from now you will still have not smoked?
I'm not.
That's
a sentence.
No, I have a feeling the next time I drink, I'm going to want a cig or two, but then the next day I'll resume not smoking again.
Well, that doesn't really count. That's
well,
not really
better
stopping.
Than me smoking three quarters a pack a day.
I'm just saying, now listen, I'm not trying to be accusatory. We're trying to speak in very open, embracing language here, Scotty. We're just trying to help you. So in other words, you don't feel like through willpower alone you're going to be able to stay off cigarettes.
Well, do you want us to help you, Scotty?
Thank you. That's what I'm leading up to right there. See, I believe you need what Tony Robbins would call external leverage, Scotty.
Well, I appreciate it.
How serious are you? And again, I'm not talking about how much do you think you're going to be able to do it, but how really much do you want to quit smoking? A lot? You really do, like on a scale of 1 to 10 of desiring to quit smoking, that's a 10, right?
Yeah, and I don't want to be an everyday smoker. However, the thought of one smoke with a drink every now and then sounds appealing.
It doesn't sound like you'll be able to do that, though. It doesn't really sound like you'll be able to be an occasional social smoker. It sounds like you are probably an all-or-nothing smoker. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Well, I have been, yes.
Okay, so I guess what I'm saying is if you really do want to quit smoking, I feel that the Rick Emerson Show can help. So,
I think so too, Scotty.
Here's what we're going to do, Scotty. Because the Rick Emerson Show cares about you and your health, and because we wish for you to live a long life and answer calls for us for many years to come. And I don't want to have to go back to getting my own coffee, so we got to make sure that you stay in tip-top shape. So here's what I'm going to ask you, Scotty. What do we get to do?
No.
If you start smoking again.
No.
Now listen, do you
think... I'm not going to start smoking again, but I can tell you this right now.
Hold on. Now, you just acknowledged, though, that you are an all-or-nothing smoker.
I don't want to be a social smoker. The next day. I don't want to.
But you acknowledge that you cannot be a social smoker.
In the past.
Would you be happy with your children being social smokers?
No.
Okay, well...
Don't you want to set a good example for them?
Don't you want them to have both parents when they grow up?
Don't
you want to walk them down that aisle at graduation?
Don't you believe...
wedding or
you don't have to roll down the aisle with an oxygen tank strapped to your thigh? A penis that doesn't work? You acknowledge that it's really not even going to be a social smoker.
I've acknowledged that in the past I have had a problem just being a social smoker.
Okay. Yes. However, you believe it would be better.
I have the willpower now to be a social smoker.
But you don't, because you just acknowledge that you don't have that willpower. So my question to you, Scotty, is what do we get to do to you if you begin smoking again?
Does that mean one cigarette?
That means smoking, period. Because otherwise you get into a whole gray area of what's full-time and what's not, and then you're going to start quibbling about the number of cigarettes that you had, and you only had a drag, and I know how this works. I saw my dad do this for like 30 years. So I totally know. I know exactly the road that you will go down. And everybody, and Tim was a smoker at one time. Tim stopped. Tim does not socially smoke at all.
How many years did you do that, Tim, do you think?
A couple off and on.
College.
Yeah. So he stopped all the way. So my question to you, Scotty, is, and you can either come up with something or we can, what do we get to do to you if you start smoking again? I can take suggestions from the audience, but I guarantee you that's going to be something you don't like.
Scotty, you might as well come up with something on your own.
You can come up with something, or we can come up with something.
I can tell you right now, I'm going to have a social smoke.
What's the point in telling us that you're quitting?
Then just say you can't quit smoking.
I can, though.
You can't, though. If you have to have a social cigarette, you cannot quit smoking.
I just know that one smoke with a drink tastes...
But you're not going to have... First of all, you're not going to have just one. You know, and I'm not trying to be defeatist or to give you negative affirmations, but you know that it's true. Then you shouldn't say that you want to quit smoking, because you don't want to quit smoking.
Okay, let's rephrase it. Quit smoking on an everyday, full-time, three-quarters of a pack-a-day basis.
And do you feel that's okay?
I feel that's horrible. I don't want to do that.
But do you feel social smoking is okay?
No, of course not.
So do you want to quit smoking altogether?
Well, yes and no, because I know I'm...
Scotty?
I know I'm not going to... I don't want to...
It is either yes or no.
Okay, no.
You don't want to quit smoking.
I do, but I you backed me into a corner.
It's a question. Do you wish to quit smoking?
Full-time, yes.
Do you wish to cease smoking? Do you wish to have more cigarettes?
I don't wish that, but I know that if I have a drink, I'm going to want at least one smoke.
Okay, well, that's, you know, we all want... Okay, you know, if you have a drink, you probably want to strip the barmaid. It doesn't mean you're going to do it. So my question is, do you wish to cease smoking?
I'm not saying will you crave a cigarette. That's not really the point.
No, but you're saying if
people
I,
who quit
if,
things, then
if I screw up and have one smoke, then I'm going to get this public flogging, which I'm not in on that.
It may be. We're just trying to help you, Scotty. We're trying to give you extra. Because look, nothing's worked in the past. You have to acknowledge that. Nothing. Is that not true? Nothing in the past has worked.
That's true.
Okay.
Are you really ready to commit to it this time?
That's what I'm saying. You just have to. I mean, look, if you're.
Because you're sitting here, like, bending our ear for the past week saying how, oh, you're so proud of yourself because you're quitting smoking.
I'm just saying, if you want to preemptively cop to being a pussy and not wanting to do it and really try, if you are already in your head making excuses for why you're going to fail, then that's fine. That's fine. That's your deal. You don't really
want to. I think I'm right there.
Then you don't really want to quit. If you really want to quit, though, we'll help you do it.
Okay.
So do you really want to quit?
I have to say no.
So you don't really want to quit?
But I am going to quit.
Okay.
But I'm going to do it I'm going to do it by... See, you backed me into the corner. That's why I said no.
I'm just asking the question.
But I'm going to continue. I didn't have one, you know, this morning.
When's the next time you're going to have one?
Who knows? That's the problem, but I don't want to. I'm not going to go back to the daily habit of.
Okay, let me ask you this then.
Smoking.
Okay, all right. Okay, would you accept this? Would you accept this? What do we get to do to you if you go 2 days in a row and have a cigarette?
Okay, now that's a lot better.
If you ever go 2 days in a row,
right?
I would actually take it one step further to say like once a week. If you're really going to be a social,
I like your 2 day feel, but what I can't say is I wouldn't like. One today, none tomorrow. One today, none tomorrow. That's not fair either.
You can't have two. I'm saying, if you are saying you don't want to be an everyday smoker, it doesn't seem like you should be able to smoke more than a day in a row.
Right. No, I agree.
So you're acknowledging then that you,
because then,
that you don't
this
wish
is
to
like
quit.
The baby steps, because if I take that more than one day thing now, that's the first step, and then it's like altogether never again.
No, but see, you don't want to do that.
I know that there's the one day thing right now.
All right, let's...
Not one day,
I don't even know,
more like
I don't even know what these people are calling about. Let's find out. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
He does not want to quit. He's like an alcoholic. The only time he wants to smoke is when he drinks. So he's in denial, and he doesn't want help.
I'm not denying it.
Well, no, that's what... But clearly, that I'm just... We are attempting to help you quit. But this guy totally nailed it, that you just... you obviously don't want to, or you would accept our
he
help.
He has no willpower at all.
You would accept our help to stop smoking if you really wanted to quit.
Nobody likes smokers, Scotty.
Yeah.
Get a grip.
Let me put it this way. I, as a smoker, don't like smokers.
Well, then we are trying to help you. Sarah, help me out here. Are we not trying to help you stop smoking?
I see it. I appreciate it.
You don't appreciate it. If you appreciated it, you would let us help you.
Scotty, I don't know you at all, but I don't like you because you smoke. Period.
Fantastic.
How's that?
Thank you, sir. All right, excellent.
Hey, I got an opening line for a song real quick.
All right, yes.
Got to put Tanya in it.
Well, what? Okay, well,
Tanya made us famous. You know, like Slits made Milwaukee famous?
Yes.
Tanya made us famous. That's your first line.
Tanya made us famous.
I have a friend who moved to Portland just because he wanted to date Tanya Harding.
Really? How'd that work out for him?
Oh, what do you think?
Does he live in the trailer in Vancouver?
I was just going to say. All right, thank you, sir.
You bet. Bye.
God bless you. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello. I can hear you.
I can hear them, too.
You're right there. Off making a snack in the kitchen. Thanks. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello?
Oh, good Lord.
Oh. Hello?
Yeah. Hi, it's just a phone. Hello, sir.
Oh, hey, this is Dennis.
Hey, of course, this explains so much. Hi, what's up, Dennis?
Hey, I just wanted to say that, you know, as a person who smoked for 16 years... And next month will be 4 years without cigarettes. Scotty's full of it. He's not ready to quit. He's never going to make it because it's all mental, and he's already given up. So, as you put it, you've preemptively striked him and called him a pussy, which therefore
that's
he
what
is.
I'm saying, Scotty. And if you just don't want to quit, just cop to it. But don't like come in and be like, "Well, I'm going to quit smoking," because it's clearly just a lie. And you're setting, and I hate to say this, but you are setting a bad example for your children by saying that you want to quit, and then clearly your behavior does not follow your words. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just saying that the same thing. If you're going to quit, you got to be ready in your gray matter. And obviously, everything he says totally contradicts that. So, anyway, love you.
Thank you. There you go. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, just saying, you guys were thinking of hypnotizing Scotty a while back, right?
We had talked about hypnotizing you. Yes.
Well, don't they do that for quitting smoking?
Well, we're supposed
to... Or do like the third cigarette, and then Scotty will think he is immediately Sarah Dillon or something.
Well, the thing is, hypnotism, again, is a thing that works if you really want to quit smoking. And the feeling I get is that Scotty doesn't really want to quit smoking. And they will tell you, hypnotists will tell you, if you don't really want to stop a behavior, the hypnotism won't help. Hypnotism will only help you do what you really want to do. And
it seems like it would work on Scotty, though.
Yeah, but you're already like rationalizing future cigarettes that you're going to have. Is that right?
That is correct, but see? You won't let me add to the sentence.
I'm letting you add. You're right here. I'm not turning your mic off.
Here's what I'm saying.
You were already saying you're going to smoke again.
To me, smoking is a everyday, you know, every half hour, every 45 minute, every hour thing.
Right.
All your life, every day, you know. And then the minute you get up, you're smoking.
Now, that's not true, because our show is 4 hours. You don't smoke during the show.
No, but, you know.
You don't smoke in the hour before the show. You go
no.
5 hours right now without smoking, which is a pretty impressive achievement
right.
for someone who calls himself a smoker.
And there's been occasional days in that 5 hours where I've had one, but not very often.
See, you could totally quit smoking altogether. If you can go 5 hours without a cigarette.
I have gone 5 days without a cigarette.
But you could, but I mean, every day you go for hours at a time without smoking.
Right.
So you could absolutely quit.
And so you're saying I have no willpower in this and that. And
I'm not saying that. I'm saying you are already telling me that you're going to smoke again.
Because I know that I desire one smoke with a drink. I know that. And that's not saying that I am a full-time smoker again if I had one cigarette here and there. I mean, this is gray matter.
So if someone's addicted to heroin.
It's gray matter.
If someone's addicted to heroin, they don't do it for a really long time, but then they decide to do it just once. Is that a relapse?
I guess so. You know, cigarettes are like heroin. So, I mean, cigarettes are exactly like heroin. I mean, it's tough to break the habit.
Well, that's where we're offering to help, and you are refusing our help. You're just smacking the offering the hand out, and you're just spitting on it. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
Hey,
I think we ought to sign Scotty up for Quitters Incorporated.
Totally.
The King short story. See if he loses a little finger, how much willpower he'll have after that.
Fantastic. And after five, well, then, we give up. And that's the death draw. All right, thank you. Good reference there. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, you know, Scotty had a great idea there. The public flogging if he smokes 2 days in a row.
I was suggesting, but the more that I think about it, it's just like that's just a waste of everybody's time.
No, it sounds great on the radio. You hire a professional dominatrix to come in there with a whip and do the actual flogging, literally.
All right, I think we've got one of those dominatrixes, too. All right.
Yeah, you can find one.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, Rick. I wanted to tell Scotty he needs to take off his little pink dress and be a man. He's going to quit smoking, he can quit smoking. If he's going to keep smoking, he's going to tell everybody, leave me alone, I'm going to keep smoking.
Just tell your children that you're going to keep smoking, Scotty.
The thing is, I'm not smoking a pack a day anymore or every day. It's like, how do I explain this?
You quit whining and you just tell us what you got to do so we can move on with our day.
Okay.
There you go.
I like how this guy's whole life is being derailed by
it. It is derailed.
All right, thank you. Let's do a few more here, little break. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I haven't had a cigarette in 11 years, but if you guys keep going ragging on poor Scotty F and J, I'm going to have a relapse.
I'm not trying to we're trying to help him, sir. We're trying to help him help himself.
Well, he's the only one that can help himself.
Man.
Ragging on him isn't going to make him want to do anything more than flee the building and have at least a half a pack of cigarettes.
It's true. We are right. If only he would love us. If only he would love us enough to let us help. All right, thank you, sir.
Bye.
All right, we got to take a break. Back with Tim Riley in a final visit at the Ministry of Truth after this. More of your phone calls. 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. You stay right there. All right, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. This email says about smoking. Rick, I quit smoking 13 years ago and I still get cravings. I want to smoke right effing now. I follow smokers just to get secondhand smoke. Scotty J has no hope. Fantastic. Thank you, sir. 503-733-2970.
I've got a franchise of Scotty J's smoking rooms.
It's just a Scotty J's hookah.
Hookah?
Bela Nua. Rick, I don't know if Scotty's experienced this before in his lifetime, but he should be made to chew a plug of beech nut chewing tobacco if he relapses into regular smoking. He really isn't interested in quitting smoking, but still it would be great penance if he took a chaw on the air and then turned green because he swallowed it accidentally and vomited. After several times of doing this, he might develop an aversion to tobacco.
Yeah, well.
Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A man wearing nothing but women's high heels has been the cause of a building locked down by police in downtown McMinnville. The unidentified man was spotted sitting on a bench on the basement floor next to a nearby medical center. After a call to 911 dispatchers, two McMinnville police units rushed to the scene and were assisted by deputies from the Anhole County Sheriff's Office. The building locked out and surrounded, but no naked man was found. The naked man is described as 40 to 50 years old, bald or with short white hair, with a thin to medium build. He was last seen running down the building's highways with nothing but high heels on.
All right, that's just weird. Where was it? That Laura and I think we were in Seattle or something over Christmas, and we saw a man who was like he was clutching a towel by his side, but the towel was not wrapped around him. It was like he had left a hotel and began running down the street clad only in a towel. And at a certain point, the towel fell off, and so he just grabbed it and kept running. It was the weirdest thing. Mm. You know, seeing a person nude out of context is really an unsettling experience. There are certain places in life where you expect to maybe run into a nude person. You're in a locker room, perhaps, a doctor's office, a hospital.
Hobbies Island.
Sobeys Island, yeah. picking blackberries, whatever. You see a nude person in a place it's not that, and it's just jarring. It's like seeing a squirrel reading a book. It just doesn't make any sense. It just sort of weirds you out. Well, all right, here's Tim Ryan.
Meanwhile, Steve Jobs says he is unlikely to give in the calls to the music industry to kind of rent out songs instead of selling them. His comments come as the company he co-founds gears up for contract renewals with major record labels. Since iTunes launched in 2003, it's sold more than 2.5 billion songs. Many in the music industry hope iTunes will ultimately start, in effect, renting music online. But Jobs says there seems very little demand for people actually want to own their own music and keep it.
Well, that's
not send it back after a certain amount of time.
That's crazy talk. Who was it that was telling me that was it on the air we were having this discussion about somebody that was using a non iTunes music service? They were using, I think it might have been that Zune crap or whatever, that hideous thing that Microsoft is selling. And they woke up one day and their whole music collection was just gone. Like, it had just been turned off. It wouldn't work anymore. This idea, you know, the record industry has just got to quit. You're in a losing position. You have no leverage, no power. You're continuing to quibble about, well, how about we just have music that just lapses after a while? It's done. It's done. It's over. You've lost. You just don't acknowledge it yet. So, I mean, give it up, friends. It is not the 1970s anymore.
I know.
Okay.
Meanwhile, a man is being held on charges that he performed dental work on customers without a license in a filthy garage.
Fantastic.
Roger Bean is 60 years old. He's being held on just $6,000. Well, that's Florida. I guess that's a lot of money there. Mr. Bean performed dental fittings and made false teeth in his garage, charging just $200 for a full set of teeth, a procedure that usually costs $2,000.
How much was he charging?
$200 for teeth.
What kind of teeth do you get for $200?
Well, this is Florida.
This is made out of tin cans and spit.
Well, the sheriff's deputy said there were health risks with operating this type of facility outside your home, and Mr. Bean's workplace was filthy. However, his clients praised Mr. Bean for saving them thousands of dollars. Ron St. Mary, who's 73, head of the neighborhood crime watch, says Mr. Bean is no criminal. He's helping old people who need teeth. I think the world of him.
Old people who need teeth. Tonight on Maury. There's so much in this story that I love. A, I can't get past the fact that he's Mr. Bean, because I just keep picturing Rowan Atkinson in a bow tie going,
There's a big picture of a dentist drill here, which he clearly did not have in that garage.
Well, what is, I want to know what he's making the teeth out of. $200 for a full set of teeth?
That's pretty good.
What materials could he possibly be using?
What's available in Florida?
I mean, what's available in Florida and can pass for teeth? Let's think.
Alligator teeth?
whatever it was. One of you was just going to the game store and buying elk teeth. Oh, that's so horrifying. I almost don't even want to picture it. Just some old woman who's been given a mouthful of deer teeth. How are you? I'm fine. And she can't even close their mouth. It's just huge. Oh, good times. All right. Well, there you go.
Let's do one more here, and then we'll take our final break.
Governor Schwarzenegger says the state will sue the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency if the feds don't speed up approval of California's request to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from vehicles.
Basically, our clock has started ticking for the next 6 months, and if we don't see quick action from the federal government, we will sue the U.S. EPA.
It's going to damage L.A.'s clean air if he doesn't.
Why is he suing the EPA?
They won't speed up approval of California's greenhouse gas emissions.
Whatever.
That whole state is doomed anyway, really. I mean,
it's that big sheet of gray as you're flying in.
I mean,
like,
really?
Anything's going to help it at this point. Does everyone have to leave for 6 months for the air to clear?
The only thing that's going to help California is a good smiting. That's it. A good smiting and then a huge ice sheet that eventually comes in and covers the whole continent for about 1,000 years. You fly into Los Angeles, man, and it's like, I mean, I know that everybody makes this observation, but Los Angeles isn't alone. When you fly into New York, it's sort of like this too, but I mean, you fly into Los Angeles and you go through that big smog layer, and I mean, people are breathing that. I mean, there's just no, and it's not going to be, that's not a thing that just takes, you know, takes a couple fewer cars left on the road and a good windy day to blow away. That's there forever.
Well, it's like they just showed some charts of the pollution in northeast Portland on the other side of I-5 because the wind blows that way. It's like cancer is blowing through your neighborhood all the time from I-5. But your friends who live on the west side, they don't have to worry. The wind doesn't blow in that direction.
It's like, If you
live right of I-5, you might as well say goodbye.
Cancer just blowing down the street where you live. It's the bad humor truck coming through. Let's see. We've got some suggestions. Opening lines for the Portland anthem. Let's see. The rain falls steady. We like it that way. We wish it rained more and kept Californians at bay. I can see this is going to be a lot of pain.
I think this is going to take a lot of work.
We sent out a press release, so we have to do it. Coming up with the opening line to this song is going to be really hard, and it's
good. I'm surprised we can keep the media out of the entryway upstairs. We're doing inquiries about this.
It's going to involve a lot of terrible rhymes. I can already see this. How about this one? Raise a microbrew and join as we sing of our city true. That's good. It's a little Ren Fair, though.
Mm.
Yeah. I'd like to avoid anything that sounds like it came out of came off a Fresh Air Christmas CD.
$15 writing song poems.
We should totally get one of those poem mills.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Mike Chase has a whole collection of those on vinyl. Those terrible companies where they'll take your poem and they'll put it to music. All right, getting a lot of goober email for some reason. I don't know why. All right, let's see. It's 503-733-2970. What a busy day it's been. We booked Nellie Olson for an interview, I think. Let's see. How about this? Did Tim leave?
I think so. Bye.
Where did he go? And like that.
He just kind of wandered. He was walking out backwards, and now he's gone.
Okay.
That was weird.
Goodbye.
See you.
On Storm in the Castle, Rick. For those who are dreaming of sights worth seeing, there's a treasure with zest here in the Northwest. Her flower grows pretty with moxie and sass.
Okay, you need to stop.
I can't censor the people's poetry. Look, here's the thing. We're never going to get a good opening line if we don't... You got to break eggs to make an omelet.
Why don't we use something like along the Starbucks line or the...
We built this Portland?
We built this city.
You can't start the song about Portland with "We built this city."
Well, then we something this city. We love this city.
I have to finish this.
Oh, I heard smelt.
For those who are dreaming of sights worth seeing, there's a treasure with zest here in the Northwest. Her flower grows pretty with moxie and sass. She's Portland, the Rose City, with culture and class. It's terrible, this idea. Yeah, that's bad. We're not going to use that, but thanks. It's 503-733-2970. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hi. We're looking for the opening line to the Portland anthem.
Yeah, you'll have to pardon this heavy metal singing because it's the only way I could
present it to where in its true fashion.
Okay.
But, you know, it with the background drumbeat of something like We Are the Champions or Paradise City.
So like a dun-da-dun.
Yeah, just start screaming up. We are the city that works. We got no strippers and dry mat jerks. And then you go from there.
We are the city that works. We've got more strippers and TriMet jerks.
Yeah.
We've got more strippers. I will say, as sad as this may seem, that's, I think, the best one we've gotten so far. We are the city that works. We've got more strippers and TriMet jerks. TriMet jerks. What is your name, sir?
It's Dave. I'm the guy that flew 118 feet off his motorcycle and lived to tell about it.
God bless you, sir. All right, TriMet jerks. All right, thank you, sir. We'll put it in the pile.
Thank you.
This one says, Rick, opening line, we're just south of, but better than Seattle. Okay, but the problem is nothing rhymes with Seattle. You start with that, and then we're screwed. Rick, how about, why buy a mattress anywhere else? We're not starting with that. Let's see. Rick, I know someone, it was you that envisioned this song to be like, I know someone, was it you? That envisioned this song to be a la Andrew W.K.
Oh, yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, so Sarah said that, and I said that was totally the thing I had in my head. So why not just start the song out with a screaming Portland effing Oregon?
Or chanting?
Maybe. Well, see, we could start with a chant, but even if we chant, the problem is nothing rhymes with Oregon, except I won't be poor again. So at some point...
You've given this some thought.
It's hard. That's what I'm saying. It's not like it's taken a day and a half just because I haven't mentioned it. Coming up with the first line is all important. It's not like the rest of the lines are going to be duck soup, but this first line is all important. The first line of a song sets the tone. I mean, you think about all the great songs you love. Think about the great anthems that you may have loved. And they all start off, you know, there's a lady who's sure all that glitters is gold and she's buying a stairway to heaven. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, you think of albums that the first lines on albums. Like, what is that? What's the first line on the very first line of Bat Out of Hell? The sun and the clowning and the hunting and the way down in the valley tonight. Whatever the hell. I can't even remember
how it goes. I'm like totally blanking right now.
I can't remember how it goes. It's the first line to a song, to an anthem. I remember every little thing as if it happened only yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
That lays out that whole song, right? It's a thesis, one might say. It tells you exactly what you're about to hear. It is an overture that tells you what's coming. That may be one of the best ever. Best opening lines in a song.
A small town girl living in a lonely
totally.
World.
How about this? Little story about Jack and Diane, two kids growing up in the heartland. I mean, it lays out all that is to come. That's why this opening line is so important.
I think we're close.
Maybe. Well, we'll see. People are just sending me things that rhyme with Oregon now. Stop it.
I don't want to be a whore again.
You're the best. We'll be back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show. You stay right there. People are just sending me lists of things that rhyme with Oregon. I don't.
Didn't you say somebody else said Oregon?
I don't want to be a whore again. But we.
I could talk about a lady on the street.
I got a lot of emails about the Portland Mercury people saying, "Hey, I picked up Sarah Dillon on 82nd and Powell." Welcome down to the Rick Emerson. Thank you. No, seriously, you're too kind. Rick Emerson Show now. Welcome CBS Radio Portland marketing guru Susan Reynolds. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Have you come in to pay compliments to Sarah Dillon and her new photo in the back of the Portland Mercury?
I have. I think it's a great photo.
Thank you, Susan.
I love it. And, of course, they mentioned the station.
They did it correctly.
Even more.
They never do it correctly.
No, you are right. So, to me, this was our spring marketing campaign, and I'm thrilled.
Sadly, and because the Mercury is free, it fits within our marketing budget.
Well, it didn't cost me a dime, so I'm all for that.
Leslie Moonves will be proud.
It makes me look good within the company.
Yes.
You can say you orchestrated the whole thing
for the company.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know about it till today. But hey, whatever.
You can totally take credit for it.
Oh, I already have.
Oh, excellent. Well done. God bless you, Susan Reynolds. All right, we're working our best to come up with the first line of the song.
Yeah,
it's slow going.
Do you have anything? Did you like the Horrigan?
Well, I think that is kind of funny.
We've got this one. Rick, strippers, hippies, and beer. Portland is the city to fear. And then the rest of the email is just filled with things that rhyme with Seattle.
Oh.
Such as paddle and cattle.
All right.
Unfortunately, the song is not about Seattle.
Yeah, I know. Real quickly, Chuck, you got like 5 seconds. Opening line.
All right, you wake up from your coma and thank your God it's not Tacoma.
All right, thank you, sir. All right, final call. You got like 10 seconds. Richard, go. Well done, sir. Thanks. You've made your mother proud. All right. The Rick Emerson Show wishes to thank Steve Kastenbaum, Jim Roop, and Lisa Goddard. Join us tomorrow when our guests will be Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com and from the San Diego Zoo, Joan Embry. Also, Susan Reynolds from CBS Radio Portland Marketing. Why, hello there.
Why, hello.
Thank you for gracing us with your presence. Rick Emerson Show produced today by every lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, Tim Riley, our intrepid PA, Scotty J. The Gatekeepers, Dave Zinn. Like us next, Dynamike at 7. As always, don't let the bastards grind you down, and please try to help the retarded. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye now.
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.